All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance conference call. Today is Monday, May 26, 2014. Hang on 1 second. By the way, Gerard, I'm coming through. All right, I apologize for that. I got on another call. Am I coming through? I'm going to shut the recording off and I'll start off. All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance conference call. Today is Monday, May 26, 2014. And I guess we'll get started off talking about June 2nd. June 2nd is still an unknown. Those who have been keeping up and following the news up on our news, breaking news page, all you do is click on the news button, and you'll see the latest that was up there concerning our communications with the courts. Last week, I spoke with the clerk to find out, to make sure, to confirm that we're on the list for June 2nd, and they said not as of yet. I tried to get a hold of the judge, and he was, like always, all judges, they're never available. So, in any event, as of Thursday, I didn't hear anything. And so, this is a holiday weekend, or as of Friday, shall I say. So, this is a holiday weekend. We're not going to find out anything until tomorrow. So, everybody should keep their ear to the ground here to make sure that June 2nd is a go. I seriously have a feeling that it's not going to be. Because they're telling me here in New York that I don't get to choose the date, that the judge has to pick a date and send out summonses to get everybody there. I'm going to try to connect at his office tomorrow to find out what I can find out. And as soon as I know anything, I will put out an email. So be very careful about June 2nd. In any event, since we started this thing and working this week on what we're going to do, we started to prepare for what we're going to do in the court itself. And ultimately, we're giving them a mandamus. We're not asking them for anything. We're telling them that we want to have enforcement. And so we decided to write a writ of mandamus. So we wrote a writ of mandamus, we wrote a bill of information, and another writ of mandamus. The first writ of mandamus comes from us, the tribunal. We call ourselves a tribunal in this court case. So it's coming from the tribunal to the federal court, commanding the court to give us enforcement, and we're specifically laying it out what kind of enforcement we want. It's only about 3 pages long, so I'm going to read it, and it is posted. The second mandamus is a mandamus that we wrote for the judge from the federal court to the state courts, and we kept it in a way that it doesn't direct itself just to New York. It just refers to state judges and county clerks and so on and so forth. And you'll see how we worded it. And so that if we get this mandamus through, then we can send out certified copies to anybody and everybody, and we will. And in that process, we can all use the same paperwork to get into the courts. So I'm kind of 90% sure this is going to go forward. Because the federal courts are very careful in what they're doing. I think our case is very well put together in a way that we've maintained our jurisdiction on every paper we've ever filed, and more so on the last couple of pages, which we're going to go through now. This is, if you want to get a copy of this, you can go up to the breaking news and click on posted May 26, 2014, mandamus to the federal court. Now, it's going to be filed tomorrow, but we have it up there today, and you click on the mandamus filed 5/27/14, which again is tomorrow. But it will be going out overnight mail tomorrow, and I will be calling them in the morning, and I will keep everyone informed of where we're going. If this mandamus is signed, then we're going to probably put a letter together. I haven't really thought too much about that yet, but when we get off tonight or tomorrow morning, I'll put a letter and demanding that this be signed before the week is out. And if we get this signed, there really wouldn't be any need to go to court. We're done. We just need to go to our own courts and make sure that things are going to go through our own courts. So let me read the mandamuses. I'm not going to read the – well, let me look at the information. I think the information is only one page, so I might read that too. Let me take a look at that. Yeah, let's look first at the mandamus. This is the mandamus from us to them, okay, filed May 27th. That's tomorrow. In the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, case number, and we give it a case number, and it starts off with a title, writ of mandamus. And here it's, let's see, three pages. They're relatively short, so we should be able to quickly breeze through this. Gerard, are you there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm here. I had to go through Skype.
Okay, yeah, I did too.
Yeah,
I think it's a problem for us coming in through that.
Yeah,
but
because we're
just
on
for
the
those.
Thing.
Though later on, people can expound to us how the phone, new phone system is working that are coming in through the website. Anybody who doesn't know about it, you no longer have to come in on phone. But, of course, you can come in on phone. Or you can come in through the website directly by clicking on the phone box there and just pushing all the right buttons, and you'll be into the site and you'll be listening through your computer on speakers. And if you have a microphone, you'll be able to talk. You won't have to dial in separately to talk. But if you want to come in on the phone, that's good too. And iPhones, there's all kinds of different ways. If you go to Lead Our Monday Night page, you'll
about
see.
The difference between recording and...
Someone talking back there? Anyway.
I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Gerard, you want to mute your mic?
It's not me. It sounds like somebody else, like
oh,
Joe.
Okay.
Or somebody.
Maybe I didn't go into... Q&A. Let me go into Q&A. Okay, those who want to get on to the mic after we're done here, just click on *6 and then press 1 to get into the queue, and you'll be able to ask a question, give us a comment, or whatever you want to do. Okay, so here's how it starts. In this extraordinary common law action, we, the tribunal, in this court of record, have placed into the record under the above case number the atrocious violations performed by the New York judiciary. Because judges, clerks, and sheriffs are ignorant to the law of the land and thereby blindly obeying unlawful orders from judges exceeding their jurisdiction under the color of law, in this case that violates the most consecrated right of the people to consent. Therefore, we, the tribunal, in this court of record, order the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, a court under Article 3, a common law court, to forthwith perform your vested authority and obey the contract and perform your duty under Article 4, Section 4, and Article 6, Clause 2, which guarantees to every state in this union a constitutional form of government, that the New York executive judiciary has and continues to do violence. To do violence to. See Bill of Information, Misprision of Treason, attached. And that's a one-pager. I'll read that real quickly when we get through with this. We, the tribunal, by certain rights and authorities protected under the Ninth Amendment and under the Fifth Amendment's common law grand jury seal, move the aforesaid district court to perform enforcement through a writ of mandamus, see attached. So we attach the mandamus, necessary to reinstate law and order among the states, thereby directing all state, county, city, town, and village judges, court clerks, county sheriffs, and the United States Marshals as follows. All judges are to obey the law of the land, i.e., common law, specifically defined in the Constitution for the United States of America, Article 6, Clause 2. All state, county, city, town, and village judges are to obey under penalty of 18 U.S. Code 2071, law of the land, and not to conceal, remove, mutilate any record, proceeding, paper, document, or other thing filed with the court, clerk, or county clerk. All state, county, city, town, and village judges are to obey under penalty of 18 U.S.C. 1512, law of the land, are not to alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal an object with intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in official proceeding, or intimidate, threaten, or corruptly persuade another person to withhold a record, document, or other object from official proceeding, or obstructs, influences, or impedes any proceeding, any official proceeding. All clerks, under penalty of 18 U.S. Code, subsection 20871, Law of the Land, are not to conceal, remove, mutilate any record, proceeding, paper, document, or other thing filed with the court of county, court or county. All clerks, under penalty of 18 U.S. Code, 2076, Law of the Land, are to file and are not to refuse or neglect to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law. The sheriff took an oath to support and defend the United States Constitution. Consequently, as per Article 6, Clause 2, the law of the United States ought to be obeyed. Therefore, upon a sworn affidavit and or under seal of the Fifth Amendment common law grand jury concerning violations by judges and clerks of all those codes we mentioned, or any other law of the United States of America, are to arrest the same for said offenses. Should the sheriff fail to perform his duties upon a sworn affidavit and or under seal of the Fifth Amendment common law grand jury concerning said violation, the U.S. Marshal shall arrest the sheriff, and the undersheriff shall perform said duties in his place. Quoting the case United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, said, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts over whose functioning the courts do not preside, no supervisory judicial authority exists. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under the auspices and under the judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. That means constantly moving, running away, never caught. Recognizing the tradition of independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. Given the grand jury's operational separateness from its constitutional court, it comes to no surprise that we have been reluctant to revoke the judicial supervisory powers as a basis for prescribing modes of grand jury procedure, and the grand jury is unfettered by technical rules. Therefore, judges, clerks, or anyone else are not to prevent, obstruct, or interfere with the people's access into the courts in order to operate in the courthouse under judicial auspices for the administration of the common law grand juries, and assigned by order on behalf and by order of the Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury, so ordered under seal, dated for tomorrow in Dutchess County, signed. Okay, real quick, the Bill of Information, which is attached to this, is a letter that went out to every judge in New York State. And it's 11 pages long, and the second half of this, within those 11 pages, includes the information and the front page that we, you know, the declaration that we file with the counties. We have that also included in here as an example of how it is that we went about doing what we've done. But anyway, this is a bill of information. The bill of information is something that a grand jury would do. There are other people that can do this also, but grand juries particularly can do this. They file what's called a bill of information, and that becomes a matter of fact in the court record. And it, what they're doing is they're saying there's a problem over here with this situation. Correct it. And once it goes on to the record, it has to be corrected. It can't be ignored. You can't bury it, conceal it, destroy it, mutilate it, and so on. All right. So we filed this bill of information. Again, it's going to be filed tomorrow, May 27th, under the number that we've got from the federal case. And it goes, bill of information, misprision of treason. On or about May 14, 2014, Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury sent the attached letter by United States Postal Service and by fax to every New York Supreme Court list of judges attached. It's about 300 of them, alerting them of a conspiracy by judges and clerks tantamount to misprison of treason. And then we put in the code, the 18 U.S. Code 2382, misprison of treason, whosoever owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them, conceals and does not, as soon as may be, disclose and make known the same to the President or some judge of the United States or to the governor or to some judge or justice of a particular state is guilty of misprison of treason and shall be fined under this title in prison not more than 7 years or both. And then there's we put in a Supreme Court ruling which requires the judge to act. We judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. So for these judges not to respond to this letter and information would be treason. And that's Cohen versus Virginia, 1821. To date, not one Supreme Court judge has responded to the alarm, which in itself is both alarming and an indictment on the entire New York judiciary. Signed by order on behalf of the Unified Common Law Grand Jury, under seal, so on and so forth. Okay, the last one is a writ of mandamus that would be coming from the judge, the federal judge, and go to, which we would receive the original copy, to us, that we would be able to serve, make certified copies, and serve on to the court, to the judges, the clerks, and they have to give us access into the courthouse, and they now have to, of course, file all our papers as we file them through, and they have to go through the judicial process. So let's read this one. Writ of mandamus. The United States District Court for the Northern District of New York orders all state, county, city, town, and village judges, court clerks, county sheriffs to obey the law of the land. Article 6, Clause 2, this Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuant thereof and all treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. The United States Constitution guarantees to every state in this Union and the people thereof a constitutional republican form of government that the judiciary and all oath takers must obey. Therefore, all state, county, city, town, village judges, court clerks, county clerks, county sheriffs, and the United States Marshals are so ordered as follows. Number one, all state, county, city, town, village judges are to obey the law of the land specifically defined in Article 6, Clause 2. Number two, all state, county, city, town, village judges and village judges are to obey under penalty of 18 U.S.C. 2071, law of the land, are not to conceal, remove, mutilate, or any record, proceeding, paper, document, or any other thing filed with the county clerk or with the court clerk or the county clerk. Number three, all state, county, city, town, and village judges are to obey under penalty 18 U.S. Code 1512, the law of the land, are not to alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal an object with intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding or intimidate, threaten, or corruptly persuade another person to withhold a record, document, or other object from an official proceeding or obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding. Number four, all clerks under penalty 18 U.S.C. 2071, law of the land, are not to conceal, remove, mutilate any record, proceeding, paper, document, or any other file in the court or the county. Number five, all clerks under penalty of 18 U.S.C. 2076, law of the land, are to file and are not to refuse or neglect to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law. Number six, sheriff took oath to support and defend the United States Constitution. Consequently, as per Article 6, Clause 2, the law of the United States ought to be obeyed. Therefore, upon a sworn affidavit and or under seal of the Fifth Amendment Common Law Grand Jury concerning violations by judges and clerks, 18 U.S. codes, and I put on all the codes, or any other law of the 50 United States of America are to arrest the same for said offenses. Number 7, should the sheriff fail to perform his duties upon sworn affidavit and or under the seal of the Fifth Amendment common law grand jury concerning said violations, the United States Marshal shall arrest the sheriff and the undersheriff shall perform said duties of the sheriff's place, in the sheriff's place. Number 8, finally, the grand jury is an institution separate from the court over whose functioning the courts do not preside. No supervisory judicial authority exists. It is a constitutional fiction, its own right, belonging to no branch of institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury operates in the courthouse and under the judicial auspices, operating at arm's length from the judicial branch. The Fifth Amendment constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge, unfettered by technical rules. Therefore, judges and clerks have no authority to prevent, obstruct, or interfere with the people's access into the courts in order to operate in the courthouse for the administration of the common law juries. So ordered, and adjudged. And then, of course, there's a place for the judge to enter, the dated and signature, and put a seal down, and that's it. So those are the three major papers we're going to be filing tomorrow. And, of course, the part I didn't read is already up there, and it's also part of this paperwork, which is the original letter we sent to the judges about a week and a half ago by postal mail and also by fax. And we gave the names of all the judges, and that pretty much indicts the entire judiciary of New York and for failing to do their duty. And by the way, you know, I've been looking at this bad behavior. The Constitution says that judges will continue in good behavior. Well, that means in bad behavior, they obviously are not going to continue. And it is obvious the meaning of that, but I went into maybe not so much, you know, because everybody asked what exactly is bad behavior. But anyway, I went into Black's Law, and bad behavior is one who doesn't obey the law. A good behavior, someone who is obeying the Constitution, obeying the law. So the moment they rule against the law, they're in bad behavior. They're going to be removed immediately. And the grand jury, of course, can do that removal. And so this is kind of part of the threat we will be putting upon these judges as we go on, that they need to behave. Okay, I got two other things to share. And Gerard, if you're here, I'm going to pass the mic over to you for a few if you want to talk about that thing with the mortgages. But first off, state coordinators. State coordinators need to be alert and focused, and if someone calls for questions or information, they need to give them details. You know, sometimes you get someone new, and this has happened over quite a few months now. This has happened a few times. It happened again recently, where organizers, people who just became new organizers, and they want to go out and get the election going, and they're looking for the information, and they call the state coordinator. Either they're not available or they don't have the information for them. They need to, at that point, spend time with that person and take them through the process. Now, we do have all the information up on our website under Jurist. If you go to the Jurist tab and just highlight the Jurist tab and click on How to Start a Jury, everything you need to do the process is there. We've got a copy of the seal. We've got a copy of all the paperwork. We have a 30-some-odd-minute, 35-minute video, I think it is, that goes through the process step by step, the three short videos to show for the election process, and all of the paperwork. So everything is there. But state coordinators, they should be really out there pushing this and helping people and pushing people along and getting this job done. I've got a lot of commitments from people from different states who are working overtime now trying to get as many counties constituted by the end of the month as possible. And within the next couple of weeks, some of these states are supposed to be ready and complete. I know Pennsylvania should be coming on board shortly. And last week we announced Washington. Washington State came on board, so they're done. And we expect to get a lot more states going. So we have 11 states. Pennsylvania make 12, and there's a few others whose names I'm not going to mention because I'm not sure yet, but trying to remember what states they were. I got to look at my notes. But in any event, there's other states that have committed that they're going to be done within the next few weeks. Let's see. I think that's about all I have. Gerard, are you there? Gerard? Okay. By the way, I am still coming through. Maybe someone in the text chat can give me a yes. I'm looking at the text chat today. Make sure I am coming through here. Okay, I am coming through. All right, Gerard, if you're in the background and you hear any, if you hear, maybe you're talking to somebody and you want to pick up the mic.
I'm here. I'm back. I'm sorry.
Hey,
I'm back.
Do you want to discuss a little bit about that information on
I just called her, and unfortunately, I don't remember. There was a woman called Charity Brown that said to use her employee number. This is the federal agency for distressed loans. It's FICA, FICA, I'll have to get them. And she said you call them and you ask for this Charity Brown. Now, what happened is apparently this Charity Brown got so many calls, and then she decided to back off a little bit. You know, they received all this money. Each state received money in the bailout for these bad loans to the tune of billions of dollars. Matter of fact, we were talking to somebody from California tonight, and he said they had like $2 billion in California sitting there that they were supposed to make good, renegotiate these bad loans and fix them up. Well, what happened is they're sitting on the money, and they're not giving it to people. California is doing it. Obviously, New York is doing it. None of them are giving the money out. They're making a lot of red tape, and it's not going out. And so what happened, I guess this woman got a letter because they had been selling the mortgages, and she got information and got a letter from the bank president that they had been, he admitted that they got paid off, and it was not their loan. And this bank, Mellon Bank, had bought that debt, but they don't really have a right to it. You see, that's the thing. They're doing this robo-signing, and they got paid, and then they sold it. And really, you're not liable for that mortgage anymore. So once this woman from the federal government, the agency that is overseeing that, gets calls, and she gets enough calls, she said she could do a case. She could open the case up on her own. And at that point, she would force them to release the money, and they actually have to forgive the loan because it's fraud. However, I guess she was getting, you know, in the beginning she was gung-ho, and now she says, well, you know, people have to call each bank that they're with. I can't handle all the banks. They should, like, if they got Bank America, they should be calling the agency on Bank America, you know what I mean? So she changed her tune. She's probably getting some heat from her bosses at this point. My opinion is that they're getting worried. The people are coming out. There's a lot of hubbub out there, and they wanted to try to start releasing this money before the people came out and the stuff hit the fan, so to speak. So that way they can say, well, look, we're facilitating it. But anyway, that was Gracie was her name, and I do have a phone number that she gave me. I don't know if she wants me to give it out, but what I'll do is I'll call her. And originally she said that she would even get on the call with you to make sure that you, and she said use her name, you know, when you call, to say that, you know, she gave you the information. It's because she got some two pretty damning pieces of paper from the banks that they, you know, the one, the bank president sort of bowed out of it and gave her the letter, the get out of jail free letter, which proves that her mortgage was no longer under them and that it had been paid off, so therefore she doesn't own it. And you know, they're not allowed to switch companies on you without your permission, and that's what some of that robo signing was. They're forging your name when they sell the mortgage, so to speak. And so it's fraud. And so at that point you're not liable for that. I was hoping that she was on the call and she would get in the queue, and I'm going to see. When I called her a few minutes ago, she was on the road heading home, so I'm going to see if I can get her on the call later, and we'll get it right from the horse's mouth. I know my information's spotty right now. What I'd like to do is get the number to that agency. And
all right,
I know.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we, if she doesn't come on tonight to talk, why don't we kind of get some notes on exactly what people need to do that saves her most of her legwork that would be involved in their case? And so tell people exactly what they need to do, and then at that point, then maybe when mentioning her name or contact her or whatever needs to be done.
She also gave me the two documents, the screenshots and the email from the bank, you know, maybe we could facilitate people getting those, because those are pretty good evidence to have in your hand. I have them in my email. I'll send them to you, John. Maybe we can put them up on the site for people to download, too.
Right.
And then we'll put the information in there, but it sounds pretty good, you know what I mean? It looks like maybe they're getting worried, you know what I mean? They've been stealing and robbing our money.
Absolutely. Let me tap something in here on top of this, and we've known this a little while now, and we've talked about it from time to time. But since we're talking about these mortgage problems a lot of people have, we'll just quickly go through a couple of facts. Number one, if they're trying to foreclose on your mortgage, number one, they don't have subject matter jurisdiction. Reason they don't have subject matter jurisdiction is that nobody does an affidavit. No affidavit, there's no case, no subject matter jurisdiction. Number two, they don't have personam jurisdiction. Reason they don't have personam jurisdiction is because they're operating through a chancery court and not a court of record. Therefore, they don't have the authority to go forward. And they'll never go into a court of record with this for the following two reasons. Number one and two of them together, unless they get fiduciary authority and have a proof of claim against you, and those are two forms. They're actually IRS forms. They have to be used for this purpose also. These are two forms that have to be filled out, and they have to be sworn to. They're affidavits, and they have to be filed at the federal court in order to execute these things. And then they have to take that and lien and then bring that over into under what's called REM and bring it into your county and file it there. And that becomes a problem because they can't file it there. Only the IRS seems to get away with that. They call it a notice of lien. But the regular people can't get away with that because, you see, there's no due process under REM. And that's not, and the law of the land requires due process, so they can't pull that off. Now, the reason why they can't get fiduciary authority over you, nor can they give you any proof of a claim against you, is because when you took out your loan originally, you got federal notes, and that's debt. The federal notes are debts, and so you received so much debt money from that loan that you were willing to hold in exchange for something. And in this case, you gave that over to the bank, and they were willing to hold in exchange for something. But ultimately, they're holding your debt, and that's what they're holding. Now, within 72 hours of you signing that paper, it isn't a contract. It's a release of monies from your CESQ fund, and that comes straight from the Fed window. So they have actually been paid 100% of the monies prior to any collection from you. So every dime that you've given these people from that point forward has been a fraud because it's already been paid off by your CESQ funds. And for those who don't understand that, it gets a little involved, but it becomes you start to see the game that they're playing, But anyway, that's the bottom line.
You know what was real important, what Gracie had? She got a free audit. This guy's doing free audits through some company. And what he did was he investigated the chain of title, and that's where they're falling down too. And he's got a little blurb here about concerns about securitization. Change of title also go to the standing question if the mortgages were not properly transferred in the securitization process, including through the use of MERS, M-E-R-S, to record the mortgages, then the party bringing the foreclosure does not, in fact, own the mortgage and therefore lacks standing to foreclose. If the mortgage was not properly transferred, there are profound implications, too, for investors, as the mortgage-backed securities they believed they had purchased would be, in fact, non-mortgage-backed securities, which would almost assuredly lead to investors to demand that their investment contracts be rescinded. You see, what they did is they sold those mortgages to investors when they didn't even have the right to the mortgage in the first place. So this thing gets deeper and bigger as it goes on. So they already sold your mortgage. They got investors buying it, but the guys that sold them the security didn't own the mortgage, so it's fraud. And it's. I'm telling you, this is a domino that's tumbling now. So, you know, probably it's good to get on the bandwagon early because they probably have so many. This is something that could break the economy here, you know, because there's so many of them bad mortgages, and the banks don't want to put this stuff up that they've had so many bad loans like this. When the investors start demanding their money back, that could be a trigger point in the economy. So anyway, this paper I'm reading off of is one of the papers that she gave me, John, that maybe we can put up on the site for people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, as soon as we get it, we'll put it up. Just real quick, out of the text chat there concerning filing without a fee, that's a fact. In the federal courts, you can file without a fee. We did. When we went in there, they always tried to play the game. Remember, they want to collect that money. And by collecting that money, this is important to understand. I come to realize that. By paying for it, you are coming in as a corporation because it's the only corporations pay. Okay? And so right there, you've already lost your jurisdiction. You got to try to win that back. There's so many ways that they get your jurisdiction away from you. You got to hold your jurisdiction, especially in federal court. But when we went in to file, we got all the paperwork together. I had in my hand a file on demand, which I didn't give to the lady at the time. And then she says, okay, that'll be X amount of dollars. I forget what the price was. And I said, no, we're the people. We don't pay for the court case. She says, oh, okay, fine. And you'll have to fill out a form. I said, no, we're the people. We don't fill out anything. And then I gave her the file on demand paper, which is one sheet, gives her all the U.S. codes and also gives the Supreme Court ruling and the law. That allows for the people that should not pay for their own courts or, you know, systems. So, and then she immediately took that, put it on top, and filed it. Then gave us the paper and stamped all the other stuff, and we left, and that was it. So federal court, you do not have to pay to get in there. You don't have to pay in state court either, but they intimidate you and force you. They force you to fill out the papers, and if you don't fill out the papers, they're not going to take it. And I haven't seen those papers, but those papers could also cause you to lose your jurisdiction. But at this point, you're under the gun, so you're really not losing your jurisdiction, and you do have to bring it up in the case that you were forced to pay and you shouldn't have to and you want your money back. I've heard of some people in state courts getting through with this. I haven't. I've tried it a couple of times and haven't been able to get through with it. So I usually pay the money, and now if we file another case, we're going to make the note that we're not, by paying this, we're being forced to. We have no other way to get in, but we're not going to accept that changes our jurisdiction. All right, with that, I'm done. You got anything else before we open up the mics?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. All right, let's take our first caller. Let's see, it's a wireless caller. And by the way, for those that are people who are on telephones, if they don't know yet, you can come directly into the room, audio and mic, right on our webpage. There's a phone there. You click on that phone, and you just fill in the appropriate numbers, and you click connect, and you come in the room, and you will have the ability to use your microphone. If you don't have a microphone, you will come in and at least hear the speakers. So for those who want to come in that way, instead of coming on the phone, you could do that. But phones still work, and there's quite a few other ways to get into this room. But let's take our first caller. It's a wireless caller from, I guess, Pennsylvania, 717. Go right ahead.
Hi, John.
Hi.
This is Jesse from Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Jess?
Good. I've just got a couple questions on... we're having these multi-county elections here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, can you get a little closer to your mouthpiece?
Sure. I'm using my cell phone, and I have my headphones in. Is that better?
That's good. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, we're having multi-county elections, and Hagan's just doing a phenomenal job. Just got some information on the press release that was sent out for these last three elections from all the counties, and I looked at it, and here it doesn't have the counties listed in the press release. I didn't know if that would be a problem. It doesn't follow.
Well, as long as you have an address in a town, they should be able to get to you. Then that should be okay. The key thing is that the newspaper is in the county that you're doing the election, even if you're not doing the election in that county, but a county over. As long as it gets into the newspaper, Ed, that's the key. It's just the honorable thing to do. We have to let the people know, and so you do the news releases.
So since the press release doesn't have and say, Lancaster County, but it's being held in York, but it's running in Lancaster County newspapers, that's good enough.
Right. In other words, they have an election for the people here, and I think it says in York County. I don't know that it gives the name of the county. That's not important. The important thing is the people of that newspaper area, that county, they can come and make the election. at that location. So that should be sufficient.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, and so that was one of the questions. You know, I wasn't sure because the NLA's, you know, on how to have an election in your county, you know, the format where you get off of that video from the download zip has it called out, and I just wanted to make sure it wasn't going to become an issue when we actually try to file the paperwork that for
Bear in mind numerous things. We don't have to do all of the things we're doing. It's just it's an honorable thing to do, number one, and they don't know what we need to do or not do anyway, but it's definitely a thing that makes them see that we went out to the people, we invited the people, we took this showing of the hands. These people want to go. We want to go forward. We're coming to the court. It's not just a couple of people here. We invited everybody, and that's why we put it in the news. And then we give a declaration. We came together on a certain date, a certain time, in a certain place for the purpose of declaring and constituting a common law grand jury here in this county, and this is the declaration of that. And it's signed by three witnesses, and you got three affidavits that are signed by three witnesses. They're going to be the same three witnesses, but if you know, if you can, you get six people, then you get six different people signing, maybe. But and that's pretty much it. Then the authority by which we do it is four pages, and then we file with the county clerk and the court clerk. And again, you know, this isn't a necessity to do, but it's giving them fair warning. It's notifying them. It's declaring to them what's going on, and now they know what we're doing when we come to the courthouse. And, of course, they've been rejecting us, and that was no surprise. We always knew we were going to get into a fight with them to get in, and that's where we're at now.
Yes. I just talked with Hagen today. I have we have a couple counties here in Pennsylvania that actually got their paperwork filed from the courthouse, but it's It's under miscellaneous docket. You can actually look
up. Well, in the county clerk, it gets filed under miscellaneous filing, yes.
Yeah, it's the criminal court clerk.
It says so on the top right side. Huh?
It's a criminal court clerk that they filed with, and it has a CP number.
Right, and they put it in the miscellaneous, and that's fine. And the point is, it's a notice to all men, and it's been filed. It's there.
Yeah, and Hagen was worried because, like, say for Erie County, it says participant type and it says defendant. And then, you know, in some cases it'll say common law grand jury of whatever county, and in Erie's case it actually has the coordinator for the county listed. And he was worried that being called a defendant that it might be used as a case. And I was thinking maybe that it was just they had to fill out the form and they put something in there, because Westmoreland's filing was actually petitioner they put under participant type, and Lehigh was a defendant also, but it was the name was actually just the common law.
These are not court cases. There's no defendants, no anything like that. This is just the people doing the business of the people, getting the people together and declaring what they're doing and filing it with the appropriate authorities, and that's it. It doesn't go any further.
Yeah.
It's just a notice so that when you show up at the courthouse and you say, hey, we're here to get access, they're already waiting for you to some degree. They know that you're coming.
Yeah,
and
if
when
you file
the
paperwork and they read the paperwork, they know why you filed the paperwork, so they shouldn't be surprised when you call them up and say, hey,
right,
we're coming down to get the keys to the grand jury room.
Exactly.
But yeah,
I would do that in person. If you're going to do that, because we did that in New York, and if you're going to do that, you can, and you should get a group of people together and go down. You should get 3, 4, 5 counties together and work together in those 3, 4 counties. So we all come together in this county, then we go to that county, and we go to that county. And go to the courthouse in numbers and say, hey, we're here to get access into the courthouse. You did get the paperwork, didn't you? And, of course, they're going to refuse you, and we'll see where we go.
I will pass that along to everyone that has their paperwork filed that aren't on the call tonight, because that's what they need to do is get everybody if there are not enough people in their county. I mean, I know in Erie they have a good group, in Allegheny they have a good group of people, so 5 won't be a problem. But like in Lehigh, we have to get the surrounding counties to come together to go down to the courthouse. Because
well, remember when you go to the courthouse. When you go to the courthouse, we're coming in as the administrators for the grand jury. Okay, remember, that's an important point. We ourselves are not the grand jury, although we will be sitting as a grand jury when we have to go up against these people to get access, and everything we have to do to get access into that court, we will work as the grand jury. Those mean collectively all of us across the state as organizers and the state coordinators, everyone together, and anybody else that's just signed in that wants to come, that's what we're at, where we are. And we're getting access. But as the grand jury, to do that, we will be the grand jury, the selected grand jury. Also, when we deal with the state problems, and it's going to be one or two or three things we're going to have to deal on a state level, and because we're more informed about what these problems are and what's going on, we need to do that business as the grand jury. So we will be the grand jury for those issues also, dealing with, the state senators or the assemblymen for the state, dealing with the governor if that's necessary, and dealing with maybe some state offices if that's necessary, just to get things into order, and then dealing with the sheriff. But after that, you know, we then just are purely the administrators bringing the cases before the grand jury. We call the grand jury. We orient the grand jury. We get a day to spend with them to teach them the principles and the maxims. We do have that course set up, which I should have mentioned a little earlier. I might as well take opportunity now. We've got the course. It's almost done. We're hoping to have it done today, Monday or Tuesday, but it should be done by the end of the week. I'm going to be starting to work on the pages this week and start getting them up there onto the website. But we're still waiting for funding, though, for the technical end to connect all these pages and make things work, you know, the magical part. But at least we'll get all the testing up there. And in theory, you know, we might be able to get all the work done within the next week, saving only to deal with the technical end, which, again, costs money. And so, by the way, if you aren't giving us you know, 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 bucks a month or something, please go out and do so to support our effort and what we're doing, because everything costs money. But everybody can afford $5. But anyway, that hopefully is going to be very soon. And everybody who's going to become an administrator must go through that course. It's going to be about 120 hours long. There are about 600 questions. You have to get 100%. You go from section to section. You get 5 questions, 3 questions, 10 questions, every unit. And whatever you get wrong, you have to go through and find the right answers and get them in there, and then you move to the next stage. So when you get through, you will have answered 600 questions, and you would have gotten all 600 questions correct. And then you would have accomplished your goal coming through the system at 100%. But there'll be a percentage next to your name which will tell you how far along you are. You know, if you're halfway through, then you'll be at 50%. You know, when you're all the way through, you'll be at 100%. And those are the people that are going to take these positions first and foremost. Obviously, we have to have knowledge going into these systems, you know, these positions. I mean, we're going to be all on the job training. We got whatever knowledge we have, but we also can talk to each other. If people don't know, we ask, and we'll find the answers. But at some point, you know, you have to get through your education and be sufficient enough in what you're doing to understand what you're doing. And it's not that difficult, you know. It just takes time, and you got to go through the process, listening to tapes, reading some things, and answering the questions and seeking out the ones you miss and getting them completed, and that's pretty much it. So that's coming very, very shortly, and people should jump on that very quickly. And when you come in to sign in for the course, you'll be asked to check a box if you're going to become the administrator. People can take this course without becoming an administrator. Okay, so they can take the course for their own knowledge, and everybody should. And so anybody can take this course. But at any given time, if at any time, even though you're coming in not to be an administrator, and you decide at a later date you want to be, and you've gone through the course or you're going through the course, all you'll have to do is go up to my account on the top to the right side, sort of right under the blue bar, click on my account, and there'll be a box in there you'll be able to check. As administrator, and when you check that box, administrator, then your course information will be put onto the administrator page, and you'll be known and identified as a potential administrator. I'm writing some papers now on how things work, and one of the things, just quickly, anybody who wants to be administrator, let's say you live in Orange County, and right across the bridge from, I'm just using my area as an example, is Dutchess County. Now, if you come across the Poughkeepsie Bridge from Orange County to Dutchess County, right in Poughkeepsie, that's where the courthouse is. Okay, and that's where, you know, you could be doing business as administrator. So if you live in Orange County, well, it's Ulster County, not Orange. If you live in Ulster County and you want to be an administrator in Dutchess County, not a problem. You could be an administrator in any county you want. So if one courthouse is closer than another courthouse in a different county, that's fine. Also, if the positions are filled in your county and you want to be an administrator, you can move over to the next county over. We need to fill these positions. The only requirement is that you are one of the people of your state. That's the only requirement. Other than that, you can work this particular job anywhere you want in any county. So that should be helpful to try to be able to help fill areas that we're short, and also in areas that we have too many people that want to get in, they can move over into the next county. All right, with that, we'll take our next. Are we done, Pennsylvania caller, Jesse?
Go ahead.
I should move on anyway because we've got a lot of callers here. So.
All right. Okay, thank you.
All right, Jess, thanks. Okay, next caller, 406 Wireless. You got the mic.
Hey, can you hear me okay? Am I here?
We can hear you good, yes.
All better right. there's something in the background. I'm going to go in a different room, but this is Anthony from West Virginia.
Okay.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you great.
Okay. Well, I think I called you right after we constituted the counties on Thursday, and we have 17 counties constituted now, and looks
great.
Like we have to change our plans. We're going to finish up next week. We wanted to finish up by this week, but we won't finish until next week.
Well, that's good. You guys are moving along, and that's the important thing, because if we get this paperwork handed back down to us, everybody needs to be running with this paperwork. We need to get into these court systems, so everybody should be doing did you say West Virginia?
Yes, we're in West Virginia, and moving right along. I got some great helpers there who hopefully are on the call tonight. And that's Bill Baker, Bill, and we'll call him Bill and David. And so I have a question. We've been talking. We haven't filed any papers yet. So we would like to be able to do the filings without using the corporate notary. I heard some talk
notary isn't necessarily corporate. I know that they've robbed a lot of stuff from us. The notary's been around for a long time. It's a magistrate position also. And they can say and do what they want. We don't play in their sandbox. I mean, look, they claim that caps are theirs. Caps don't belong to them. It belongs to us. It's we the people. It's the language. It's the English language. And if we want to cap something, we cap something. If we want to make a point out of a word, for instance, like on our seals, we cap everything on the seal. We go into their courts. We're going into, look, when we go into, I went into a federal court this week on Friday. And I went in with a friend to help out, and he's doing a case with the IRS. And we walked in there, and they got the little gates and stuff, and he walked through the gates. You know, as far as they're concerned, you're walking on their ship. You're offshore. That's all BS. It's not true. I'm still on the land. I can look out the window. I see the streets and the cars out there. I know where I'm at. I'm in reality. And I look at the flag. The flag was fringed. I know what that means. It means that we're under admiralty law, but not in my court. This is an Article III court, and it is true that the Article III court does do business on admiralty, maritime. It does equity, but it also does common law. And it may be that when you walk into that court, right away you're in an admiralty court, or really they're acting I forget this word from time to time, chancellors.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a chancery court, ultimately. And so they're flagging you the fact that this is what you're coming into, and you say, okay, fine, I understand what you're set up to be. Now I'm changing jurisdictions on you. We're moving over into common law. And we use all the language for the common law. We make it clear, and we make it come out of the judge's mouth. What jurisdiction say you that we're in? I mean, you do realize we're under common law. Are we not under common law jurisdiction? You see, that's where the battle is. And and that's what you got to force out of it. And if he refuses to answer, then on and for the record, let it be known that the judge refuses to speak. Therefore, that's fraud upon the court. I know we're in a court of record, but the judge refuses. And they're talking about statutes, and that flag that tells me that we're not in a court of record. First of all, right here being at this purpose of this hearing, okay, tells me I'm not in the common law court. But that's not how it works. So, you see, as long as you protect your jurisdiction and you let everybody know, you do your affidavits, you do your reports, you do your writ of errors and everything else, and you write your papers and you maintain your jurisdiction, you're good. Don't worry about all this other stuff because that's what they want you to do. No, they're coming to our sandbox. We're not going in theirs.
So we can go ahead and use the notary then. I thought maybe there was a way to do it without using the notary, and it would be more pure that way. That's kind of what I was thinking.
No, notaries are good. There's no problem with a notary. As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking to people about considering going being notaries. We should all consider going being notaries. And we did have this information. I never got around to it to stick it up on the website where you could take a test to become a notary. Definitely not a problem. So don't get worried with that. You know, there's a lot of things that they do. Look, a fraud is a fraud is a fraud, no matter how you do it. They say, as long as it's legal, we're good. No, if it's a fraud, it's not legal. May be a statute. The statute's not legal. Even the Supreme Court says it wasn't even a law from its conception if it's against the Constitution. So it's all a fraud. It means nothing to us.
Okay.
And we hold our case and let them know we know the game. You know, we spill everything out in our paperwork. We don't hold anything back. We made that decision. We have to get it all out, no matter what it is. We talk about all the blemishes, everything. If you read our papers, we get it all out there.
I've read some of them. I haven't read all of them, but I've read some of them, and they do the job.
Yeah, we wrote a paper just recently in New York here. They have a thing called the 730 code, and that makes you crazy, and therefore you can't speak, you can't participate in your own case. You're pretty much buzzled, and they're forced a lawyer on you, and they do that by claiming in the court you're crazy. That's a fraud, right there, and we exposed it. We exposed it for what it was. It's a Nazi fraud, okay? And also calling us terrorists, and the cop shooting back in 2010, and calling us sovereign citizens, and all of a sudden, sovereign citizens, we're sovereign citizens, we're therefore connected to these cop killers, therefore we're cop killers, and we're terrorists. Hey, wait, you know, we expose that too. It's a fraud. Again, another Nazi thing that they do, the whole system. So we just expose it.
Well,
don't
we're working on turning things right. We're just working on turning things right, and that's what we want to see here. And
right.
Thanks for your support, and I'll just leave you go and catch the next call. I don't have another question for you, John, but
right.
I'm still going to be working on those audio things for you. It's just we've been constituting counties. I haven't been able to get to those audio files.
Well, it's not all. More important is getting the work done that we have to get done. You know, the audios aren't all that important, but it's good to have some. You know, if you pick up something here or there and say, hey, that would be a good clip, and you clip it out, and we'll post it. You know, you don't have to do a lot of them. And we have so many tapes out there, it's taking a long time to go through all of them. We've been doing this for over a year.
It's a good idea, though. It's a good idea. And I put a couple of things on today's call that would be good to have clips of. So,
anyway, so make a note of it.
Keeping that in mind.
So.
I'm just still keeping that in mind. So we'll see you later, and God bless you, John.
Right,
and I'll be listening to the rest of the call. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, let's take our next caller. It's a 760, another wireless caller. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. This is Joe in California.
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. Kind of in a conundrum because I think I have what is needed for my own confidence to click every single box and have California constituted. I can explain
that
in...
Joe.
What?
Hello? Oh, John must be having troubles. He said he lost you.
I can
hear you.
Okay. Try again.
He was fine on this end.
Yeah, well, he's coming in now. All right, good. Yeah, try it again, Joe.
Okay. Do you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay, listen, I'm in a conundrum here because I think I have everything needed to constitute California entirely, but I don't want to get too far from some standard. So I can tell you what I have, and I can tell you in a way that is in great detail, or I can tell you right now on the phone.
Well, let me just ask a question. If it fits in this criteria, it'll work. If you're looking to do a lot of counties at one time, as long as it's a reasonable distance to travel, not an unreasonable distance, then you could do it. You know, we've done six counties, seven counties in one place. You know, we've stopped in two or three different places on a Saturday, and you hit a whole bunch of them. You do multi-counties here, multi-counties here, and multi-counties there as you're traveling along the line. We did Connecticut. Connecticut was reasonable because it was small in one place. Rhode Island was reasonable, so it was small. We did it in one place. California is big, so you probably have to get at least six or eight places maybe, a reasonable distance to get all the counties. So that's how you should work it.
Yeah.
So if your plan falls into that, you're good.
Okay, well, that doesn't answer my question because I come from New Jersey. I know what New Jersey's like. I moved to California, and I know what California is like. And California is not New Jersey. California is not New York. What I can tell you what I have, is my affidavit, and I've got an affidavit of mine for every single county in California that isn't yet constituted. I took them to Kern County, and I've got signatures of witnesses that are fully in agreement to go ahead and publish my affidavit on what I have, which is a Dropbox account. So what I'm telling you is, if somebody calls me and says, how's it going in my county, I'm volunteering, I can say, go to Dropbox, get in there, I'll show you how to get in there, here's an affidavit, your county's constituted, tell me what you're going to do next, and then we'll move. We will move, and we'll be ready when it's time to file, and then we'll find out who is the next gatekeeper who says common law grand jury due process does not exist in your county. So in other words, I'm placing you on the hot seat. I'm telling you that you're the gatekeeper telling me that my affidavit does not work, and all these witnesses that's on this affidavit I have for every single county in California does not work in order to constitute common law grand juries due process in California, each county. And what I'm telling you is when I go to people, I tell them an affidavit like this, it's easy, don't worry about it. It's like saying the sky is blue.
Right, but do you do the newspaper thing, and do you do a physical meeting somewhere so the people can come out at a certain date and a certain time and hear what you're doing, spend the three videos with them so they understand what's going on, and then take the showing of the hands and invite them to sign up as a jurist or to come into the process as an administrator or whatever they want to do. Do you do that also?
No. Actually, the three videos I could spend and I have spent a lot of time trying to get through to you that a lot of the stuff that you are claiming to be true is not true. So, it doesn't matter to me.
You'll have to tell me which or what you're talking about. Those three videos have come from, two sources come from, two of them come from
Griffin,
okay? And he's been pretty accurate for as far as I can see. And the third video is my video, which briefly is a short version of what's on the front page, which is pretty much United States versus Williams. So I don't know what it is that you think might be an error. Let's go back. But before we talk about the error, let's go back to the process. It is imperative. We can't bypass this step. We have to have a physical place. We have to have an ad, not an ad, but we have to have a news release, a press release about the event and invite the people. You see, That's the most important part. That's the honorable part. We have to do that. So you could do, like I said, three counties at a time, as long as it's reasonable. In a reasonable area, people can travel. And then you could do three counties. You do the edge in all three papers, and you let them know where the meeting's going to be and that they're going to be constituting grand juries in their county and so on and so forth. All of that information, all of the details, hold on a minute, all of the details, if anybody goes under the jurist tab and clicks on jurist, how to start a jury, and when they click on that page there, how to start a jury, they get a video, that 35-minute video explains the whole process. They get to download all the documents and the three short videos to play at the election, and they also get a copy of the grand jury seal that they need to do for their state. And so everything they need to do and know is right there. And, of course, talking to people who've done it before is helpful. It's very helpful to bring a notary with you. If you're going to do more than one county, if you're going to do three or four counties, you better bring a notary because there's way too much paperwork involved, and you got to get it all notarized and to the appropriate people. So you need a notary or a judge or a justice of the peace or somebody there that can sign. Okay, so that's that part. Now going into the error. What errors are on these videos?
I've explained that, and I've sent forum posts, and nobody listens. You do not listen to me. But
on the forum post, I've only really responded to a couple of forum posts since I've started this. And one was recently over the weekend. It was something on Romans. There was a little discussion on Romans, and I picked up on that. I happened to see the statement on the, you know, what do they call it, the recent posts on the right side, recent comments. And I just happened to pick that up, and I went and did a response to that. But I personally, at this point in time, and it's been like this for quite some time, for me sometimes to give someone 5 minutes is almost impossible sometimes. I have people, for instance, Kathleen, working on the papers for us. I mean, she's been trying to get me all day today, and I think yesterday also. And that's an important person for me to talk to, and yet I've been so busy I couldn't even call her over the holiday weekend. And so for me to go read posts, I can't do that. If there's something that we're doing an error, you need to get me. You can call me up on the phone and say, hey, John, you got an error going. Let's talk about it. Or here. Right here, you can tell me here. But it's really difficult for me to get out there to read these. I just haven't got the time. Not there.
Okay, no, I'm not saying that what you do in your time is an error. What I'm saying is I've constituted, with the help of four other people, every single county in California, and what I see it as is a marketing ability to say to anybody that calls me, that says to me, what's happening in my county? I can say, your county's been constituted, but listen to me, it's like saying the sky is blue or that water is has a boiling point and a freezing point. So when they say, okay, what do I do next? Then I say, get ready to file. There's more things that may need to be done in your specific county, in this Constitutional Republic of California, that bridges the gap that you even haven't passed yet between us and those people who are operating what can be a very good defensive force for the common good if they would just see their errors. And that's what we do in this common law grand jury, is what we do is show them their errors. So,
well, look, at one of the important things, again, I understand what you're saying and what you're doing. It sounds like a nice idea on the one hand. I'd love to take shortcuts. I see a lot of people doing some different things, but, you know, I'm trying to take shortcuts, that is, and in my opinion, it's the wrong way to go. In this case, what we're doing, you have to get the newspaper ads. You have to have a physical location where people meet. You have to invite the general public. You see, that's the key. You make the invitation to everybody. It goes through the newspaper. This is why they can't deny us, because when, you know, they could try to make some cases, oh, you're just a bunch of crazy people, and you're disgruntled people, and oh, you got court cases and problems, and you're just a couple of people in the corner over here. No. We're in every county, and we put notices in the newspaper, and people came from different areas. Who came from the newspapers, who didn't, is irrelevant. Whether they come or not, it's irrelevant. You did the honorable thing. You showed the videos. You gave the presentation. You made the offering for everybody to come in and join into the jury pool, and ask them also to participate. So it's not people that's just disgruntled people or people with court cases or a small group in the corner here. It is the people. It is everywhere. We cannot skip that part of the thing. It can't be done. I'd love to be able to do it quicker and say, let's get California on board tomorrow, but no, we can't do it. No. We have to do the honorable thing and to invite the general public by the newspaper.
Well,
it's got to be done.
As much as the jury has to be randomly picked, that was a big thing, that we randomly pick jurors. That's what they're all worried about. It's the same thing with the meeting. When you put that article in the paper, it, like John says, they can't accuse us of being a disgruntled people. What we're doing is we're putting an article in the paper, so we're opening up the randomness of it. It's not like we're controlling by a bunch of people who've had bad experiences in the court, which is, by the way, it would be easy to get lots of people because everybody's having trouble in the court, so it's going to get easy to get those people. But the fact that you throw it in the paper means that you can get anybody and everybody. So that's a sort of a randomness that gives it more credibility, just like you wouldn't want to be picking jurors out of your own group of your own specially educated people, you know what I mean? So then they would say it's kind of like a stacked jury, you know what I mean? So I think you need that randomness of doing a public announcement is my point. That's all.
Joe?
Yeah.
Still there? All right, so yeah. We have to do it that way. It's extremely important.
No, well, hold on, John.
Yeah.
You're not telling me the way to do it. What you're telling me is randomness. If you're saying three counties, then what I'm going to say is it's 3.5 counties, because three counties in New York is not the same thing as three counties in California. And
well,
I understand that.
Your counties are big.
I've got the biggest county in the country.
I understand that.
And I'm in the middle of it, and it costs me a lot of money to go to Kern County. So
I understand that.
Okay, in the last state meeting, what I was given was this California is a sleep business. I hung up the phone, and I'm almost hanging up the phone right now. What I have done is stated that the air is what we need to breathe, and I've done it in an affidavit, and I've done it in a place where people meet, and I've added the requirement of giving public notice. I've sent emails to publishers. I've posted on forums. And my wife has looked into what exactly is the statute law for what is public notice, and they even admit that everything's changing. So
okay, well, let me give you an example of your state, because I did look a little bit at your state. You got 207 members, and we looked at that, I think, last week, and I came up with some statistics that I discovered by looking at your state. But you have 207 members. That's a pretty decent amount of people. You have you're occupying 47 of 58 counties. You guys have 58 counties in California, and of the 58 counties, you have members in 47 of them, which means, in theory, you know, let's say 40. If you call the people in each county and you say, look, you know, there's two people in the county, you guys need to do this, blah, blah, and help them out, work them through the process, let them know the necessity, and also get to the county next door or people next door, if they're not too far, ask them to come. Look, if they could do it with three or four people, they put the ad in the paper, more people may come. They invite some people from Liberty groups, they may come. They bring family and friends or, you know, neighbors and so on, they may come. Before you know, you may have a couple of dozen people in the room, and you could do this in every single, at least 47 counties, but let's say 40. 47 counties means you have 11 counties left. And maybe you can catch some of those counties because they may be close enough to another county to be able to say, hey, you know, we can kind of do this on the border. you know. And if you take two counties that are long, that are next to each other, and I'd have to look at the map of California to appreciate what they might be, but let's say they're long and you're very close to the border between those two long counties, well, what's good for one county is good for the other, even though they have to travel a long distance maybe, but they're in the same counties, and both counties they got to travel a long distance if they're on the other end of the county, so that could be reasonable to do two that way. So in theory, with occupying 47 counties, you can, in theory, do half of 58, that's 25, 26, 27, 29 to 30 counties, you could do that, two counties in 30 elections, generally speaking, in theory. So I haven't sat down to really get into the geography of California. When I did New York, I broke New York into one, two, three, four sections. We had Southern New York, we had Northern New York, we had Central New York, and we had Western New York. And then when we went into Western New York, we found it reasonable to do two or three locations and to get Western New York pulled together. The same thing in Central New York, the same thing in Northern New York. And now Southern New York, we did 14 counties, every single one of them, as fast as we could. And, you know, maybe one a week we did, and we were done with the maybe even two a week. I don't even remember. But we did them one at a time until we decided, well, let's do a couple of counties at the same time. So I don't know how – I'd have to sit down and figure out California. And if you're asking me for the help to do that, maybe I can find the time. But I'm sure you could figure it out. And combined with other leaders, you have two or three other – you have a new state leader now. So I think you got three, maybe four state leaders for California. And you could probably use more because California is big. And between years, you can rock and roll and get it done in a month or so, you know? You there, Joe?
Yeah, I can rock and roll. I actually have a Fender guitar, and I'm working on my own song. But as far as actually getting through the gate that you're keeping, I have to actually know exactly what you want in order for me to check those boxes. And I could have checked those boxes. So if you can, in some way, communicate to me what is needed other than public notice, what is needed other than gathering people together, what is needed other than affidavits signed by me and witnessed by other people, then I'll know exactly what you want so that I can check the boxes that you want me to check. But as far as I'm concerned, what is happening in our country is people are waking up. And once one precedent is set, like Gracie, who's called me, or Gigi, who's called me, or Rob Toro, who's called me, once one precedent is set, there's going to be a flood. And so there had better be the foundations built because the flood is going to be way too much demand and not enough supply. So what I'm saying is you go ahead and you tell me precisely what I need to do in order to get that box checked.
Well, what you need to do is go out to the Jurors tab and click on how to start a jury. And right there I did a 35-minute PowerPoint or video to exactly showing exactly what step-by-step we went through all the paperwork, and all the paperwork that's in that video is downloadable, and if you don't know how to fill it out, watch the video again, and the process is all there. The process is pretty simple. You decide to elect a grand jury in a county or three or four counties at one time. You find a location that's reasonable if you're doing more than one county. Then you, once you got the location sealed, you send out a news ad, not a news ad, but a news release, okay, press release. You call up newspapers in each county. If you can get more than one newspaper in a county, you get more, but you call up the newspapers and you give a press release. You find out, they'll give you, you ask them where to send a press release. They'll give you either an email and or a fax number. You pick your choice, and you take the paper that we have filled out. All you do is put your county and the location and the time and the date, fill that out, and you send it to the news, and they put it in the news. On that day, you make phone calls to as many people in that county and the surrounding counties. You tell them to get friends and relatives and neighbors. You tell them to visit their liberty groups and invite them. You do the same. Again, a lot of phone calling for the week. And then you come together in that one place for 35 minutes. It's a 2 or 3 minutes introduction. You play the video. It's like 29 minutes. And then you get up and say, okay, all those in favor of reinstating the common law grand jury here in the counties of A, B, and C, raise your hand. Okay, thank you very much. And then you fill out all the papers. You have your notary. You get the seals done and, you know, get everything notarized and the paper signed and everything. Then you may have some time for discussion if you want. But it's done. Now the job is done. Now it's a matter of filing it whenever is necessary. And it doesn't have to be filed right away. We've got West Virginia coming on board, and they're pushing the whole state pretty quick. And they may just want to file all at the same time. So however you want to do it there, you could do it any way you want. You got to get a seal before you file, so each county leader has to buy a seal, and you have to seal all this stuff, and you're ready and you're good. That's it. There's nothing more to it than that, but it's a honorable way to do it. It's a physical meeting. It's calling people together. It's putting out the newspaper ad. It's got integrity in it that they can't argue or deny. And that's the key to this whole thing. You see, we've done it with integrity. They have nothing to say. Their mouths are shut. And that's why we have to do it that way. I mean, I wish we could do it quicker. All right, but Joe, if you want to talk some more on it, why don't we go to the rest of the people? You can pick me up in the end, or you can give me a call tomorrow. We could talk some more personally. Okay. All right. Next caller, anonymous. Don't know who you are. Go right ahead.
Hello. Hello, John.
Hello. Yes. Hold on 1 minute.
Hold on
1 minute. By the way, in the text chat, if we can keep it on subject, I see there's a lot of things going on. I'm not paying attention too particularly, but some of the things we're getting lost. So let's focus in on where we're at. Go ahead.
Yes, John, this is Aideen and John.
Yes.
I have a lot of private things to say. And when do you say, you're going to be after this court on the 2nd? It may happen and may not, you said, right? It may be on the 2nd or it will be definitely on the 2nd.
Oh, well, nobody knows definitely. I mean, look at... Can this judge afford to go against us with the way we wrote our papers? Nope, I don't think so. He's going to be committing judicial suicide on himself, so to speak. He's going to be in bad behavior. He's going to be indicted. He's going to be removed from the bench, and I'm sure he knows that. Once we get to the full point, and so that's why I say we're 90% sure that's going to go through. But on the other end, if the powers that be are paying close attention and they got a gun to his head, they go a different way because, there's a gun to my head. So we don't know where we're at with that, how much under the radar we still are. There's a lot of things going on out there. There's a lot of people doing what we're doing, not on the level we're doing it. They got more exposure than we do. We're more grassroots, and so maybe we're not as seen as much. Clearly, New York leadership knows that there's a problem going on, but I don't know if the high people know. But so who knows what's going to really happen? And the mandamus is going out tomorrow, Tuesday, overnight for Wednesday, and we're expecting a response by Friday. And then if we get that response by Friday, then we won't even have to worry about June 2nd. But June 2nd does not seem to be that... for sure yet, because they haven't got us on the docket yet. And until we're on the docket, we can't say for sure we're going to be going. And I'll be finding out tomorrow, and people need to be paying attention, and I'll be getting an email out. As soon as I know, I'm going to get that email out. There are no more Monday night meetings before that, so pay attention to your emails and listen up. If you don't know what's going on, go to the website and find out. Go to the news, the breaking news. You will find it there, whatever's going on. We'll post it on the front page. June 2nd is out, whatever. Another date is in. or whatever. Just pay attention. Otherwise, people will be traveling for no reason, maybe. And I don't want to see that happen, but it could if they're not paying attention.
Yes, I will also tell them. John, I have also a question to you. Our case is growing and growing out of proportion more and more. And, you know, we found a bunch of people in our situation as well. Also, we found that there was a special funds, federal and city and state, given to Mr. Bloomberg for cases like ours. He even make an example on his web. He created a special agency in 2006. And since 2006, we found the families who are in our position extorting properties and calling it civil case. And there was a special funds, not only for investigation.
Right, but I don't want to get too much deep into your case here online because a lot of people don't even know what you're talking about, but we want to stay on point. But how are we working with your paperwork?
Significant, very, very significant. It's also like misuse of the funds, you know. It's additional to.
Well, yeah, they're all criminals. We all know they're criminals, and they're going to take your property unless you find a way to stop them.
But it's not just our properties.
Understand. This is not just you they're after. They're making hand, you know, money hand over fist here. It's not enough for them to just steal your property. They need a lot more than that because that's what they want. They're criminals.
Yes. And can we add federal judges there?
Huh?
Can we add federal judge in there?
What, in your case?
Yes.
You can go to the federal courts. That may be the way to go with your case, but you can't do nothing without an affidavit.
No, that's the truth. But in affidavit, we have two state judges. Can we add one federal?
Oh, as someone to sue?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What did he do? I didn't know.
He just cover up that he has conflict of interest and dismiss our case against the police, which was absolutely proven. There was no reason to dismiss
it. Well, yes, you can add that in, but your case, you know, grows and it becomes more complex, which I don't want to discuss here on the open air here, but... you should call me during the week, but before you call me, get your affidavit, because I can't do nothing without an affidavit.
I've got to see
the details. I have to have, if you're going to add that information in there, you got to get that into the affidavit. If it's not in your affidavit, you can't do it. It's got to be sworn statement, and you got it. You know, that's what you got.
We also have attachments that we send it to him.
All right, well, I don't care too much about the attachments at the moment. I just need to see the story. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you're saying that this is going to be your affidavit and we clean it up and we know exactly what your case is about and all the specifics and the details, and then you can make the accusations and then you can sue everybody necessary, and then you pull in all your evidence behind it. But we got to make it simple. It all starts with the affidavit. The affidavit has to be, in your case, ridiculously long and detailed, because there's so much involved.
Yes.
With that, I don't want to talk too much more about your case.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
No, but what's the best time after we send it to you? What's the best time frame? Is it second half of the day, first?
Kathleen, you calling me?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you got dropped off because I'm still on and I'm talking to people. They're talking back.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm back. There was someone calling me that was online. Let me see. What were you saying now?
I said, I asked what's the best time after we send it to you.
There is no best time. Just get me when you can. You know, look, the best thing to do is you call me late morning. If you don't get me late morning, call me late afternoon. If you don't get me late afternoon, try me in early evening. And if you don't get me then try the next day. Early evening is like 8 o'clock New York time. So,
okay.
Other than that, you try the next day. My phone rings so much, I get so many phone calls at certain points, I just have to shut it off for a while. So people get through. Some people are very lucky and get through all the time. I don't know. They may have, maybe I'm bugged. I don't know. What do I know? But they get through.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
All right. Let me take the next caller, 352.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next caller is 352. Go right ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hello, this is Michelle Christensen. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing good. I have some information I want to go over. I've been listening to the other calls, and I think I can be helpful. I want you to know I just filed a counterclaim criminal complaint in reference to foreclosure, so I have some information to give to the audience who's been listening in reference to some information.
Are you the person speaking with Gerard?
Yes, I have, yes. And by the way,
were you on early enough to hear what we were talking about?
I came on the call about 5 or 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, so I didn't.
So you've got Gerard coming in. Gerard came in and talked a little bit about you. Gerard, are you on the line? You can unmute yourself and talk too. But go right ahead. What was your name again?
Michelle Christensen.
Michelle, okay, go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I filed a counterclaim criminal complaint in reference to foreclosure, and I was listening to the other gentleman talking about another lady in reference to some information and regarding foreclosure as to how they are committing the fraud pertaining to the loans. I can tell you I have some information on that also. And also, John, I was listening to what you were addressing and what you're getting ready to to file with the court. And what I wanted to give you, I'm sure you have this information because you're very knowledgeable. And by the way, I bless you for what you have done. The one code that I discovered that I have not come across looking up laws and stuff was what statute and code fell under us private sectors as us govern under the Constitution. And that statute, I don't know if you are aware of it, but it's 7701, -1.
Is that a U.S. code or
See that, and you know something, that's why I want to bring it to your attention. It's under a U.S. code, but we don't fall under a U.S. code. And unfortunately, that's why I didn't, we have not come across that statute in that code under the law, because what they did is they removed it.
Well,
now,
we do fall under the U.S. code.
We fall under the U.S. code when it comes to Title 18 and to the fraud that's being committed. But
well,
we don't.
The U.S. code is part of the law of the land, providing constitutional. Okay, so we fall under the U.S. code in the sense that the codes that I have mentioned, it is to keep our bureaucrats, our elected individuals, our servants in place and in order. And so those codes are used against them. Now, they say that those codes don't exist for them, and that's federal stuff. But we're going to make it clear in this court case. No, it is written because of you. That's why that code is written. And
that is
the Supremacy
correct.
Clause of Article 6, Clause 2 makes that clear. So that code is for us. Now, any code that controls the behavior of people, whether it's federal or state, that's null and void because you can't control my behavior. That's my job. And so, but other
that
than
is, you are correct. Let me tell you what I have, so that way you can make note of it, since you're going to be filing your claim with the court in reference to what you outlined. Because basically, what you outlined is basically what I outlined. Other than I come across some information that I have not come across looking up laws and codes in reference to the private sector as to we the people under the grand jury laws. And the person, now in reference to the person, that's under 26 U.S.C. section 7701A1. The withholding agent or agencies, they fall under 26 U.S.C. section 7701A16.
26 U.S.C. 7701A16
is the withholding agent or agencies.
Okay.
The person in reference to the person as to the corporation, they fall under 26 U.S.C. section 7701A1. We,
okay,
as we the people, as the private party or private citizen, we fall under 26 CFR section 1441-1C3, which stands for individual, which is us as we the people, as a private citizen,
okay,
in reference to the grand jury or the grand jury in reference to the Constitution. Now, that is what I discovered in reference to the statutes and the codes. Now, in reference to the foreclosures, I can tell you I've done a lot of research. The foreclosures in reference to the laws and the bonds, and also in reference to the trusts, and also in reference to what is called an escrow account pertaining to the trust or the deed.
So that would be the SQ?
Excuse me?
The SESQ account, that would be the trust?
Yes.
Okay.
And also in reference to your taxes, in reference to the deed of the trust pertaining to the title of the property, in reference to the owner of their property, of their
mortgage. So that
mortgage.
That would fall under the giving them the jurisdiction over you and the sense of fiduciary authority over you.
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay.
Now,
so
what
those
I...
Forms, those two forms, by the way, are, I think it's 4490, and this is IRS forms 4490 and also Form 56. Those are the two forms that they need for this. One of them is a fiduciary authority over your trust.
Correct. They also use a W, as you were addressing in, earlier in the conversation, as how they trick you in reference to jurisdiction. What they do is, what's happening in reference to the foreclosures is they these agencies, they look up your public record. For instance, the gentleman that was talking earlier in reference to the fraud and how they go about selling the notes to your mortgage claims. What they do, or what they have done, the banks, is they had pooled a bunch of these notes together, which fall under securitization loans. And what they did is they gathered them up. And now I'm talking about the loans now in reference to people that were not behind, meaning that they were not in default on their loans.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is they auctioned or they sold those notes or those loans. And what they did is the attorneys, including judges.
But that, correct me if I'm wrong, that was all a fraud.
Oh, absolutely. What I'm talking about pertains to fraud, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
So what they did is they sold your note, the banks. They sold your notes to other lenders and investors. And then but what they did is they bought these loans, okay? Or they bid it off these loans in big groups, not just individually. They bundled them up in big groups and they auctioned them off. They sold
right.
them. What the attorneys were doing and those that were buying these notes, okay, they are now the holders of these notes. Now, what's happening is it's not the banks, it's the insurance companies that are filing these fraudulent claims, including the attorneys. And what they're doing is they're sending these notices to all these homeowners, making it look like they are in default. And I can tell you, I am a victim of this fraud. So I have already filed an affidavit, criminal complaint, pertaining to the attorneys and in also the banks. I already filed my claim. The reason why I filed it criminally, and this now falls back onto the jurisdiction as what I wanted to bring to your attention, when you file an affidavit, criminal complaint, as to the same scenario as to what you're outlining, in other words, you're doing it the same way. The only difference is you're putting the title, affidavit, criminal complaint, counterclaim, or criminal complaint, affidavit, as depending on if it's, in other words, if it's not a counterclaim, then you're filing a criminal complaint, affidavit, in reference to, on your behalf, as to whatever you're bringing forth as to what,
well,
where they violated the law.
let me make a point here for you to know. I don't know if you realize this. If they've come after you and you're counterclaiming them, you don't have to counterclaim them. You can sue them directly as the plaintiff and
correct.
Make them the defendants because they're in a different court than you are and they don't have jurisdiction over you. You've got to make that point in your case. And therefore, you're changing jurisdictions to where you belong and not under the fraud but under the reality. And therefore, you are now the plaintiff and they are the defendant and now it is your court of record.
You are correct. Absolutely. You are correct. And that's what I did. So what I did is I challenged their jurisdiction. And the reason why, I'm hoping that those that are facing foreclosure or threats of losing their home, I'm hoping they're listening to me. Because what they do is they send you notices in the mail. You think it's a notice coming from your bank. But actually what it is, it's a debt collector that bought your note or was given your information and who, in other words, who is part of the pie as to collecting off of your home. And now this has to do with attorneys, of course, buying your note. But what mm-hmm. they're doing is they're making it look like it's coming from the bank. The notice,
yeah,
in other words,
I've seen them do that also with the credit card things also, and they make mention of the name of the credit card company, but then they got another company that really is suing you, and you're sued by a lawyer who represents a different company, and it looks as if the company is coming out after you, and they're trying to hide the fact that they can't exchange a contract from one company to, you know, you can't sell a contract without an agreement of both people who are part of that contract. So,
that is correct.
So that is another fraud, and you could beat out all your credit card things with the same thing. That's all fraud, every part of it.
Absolutely. Now, here's the good news. The reason why I'm saying that you file this as a criminal complaint. Now, here's what I will say what I did, and of course, who's ever listening, I ask that you verify, on your own behalf as to what I'm claiming. But here's what I did. I filed an affidavit, criminal complaint, against the attorneys who brought forth this claim against me as to claiming that I was in debt on a fraudulent claim pertaining to my mortgage. I also went after the banks. I mean, I went after everybody. I also listed the county clerk. Yes, actually I did. I actually listed not the county clerk, but I actually listed the person who delivered the summons to me. I listed that person as one of the defendants, and I also listed the witness, the notary, in reference to the claim.
Yeah, I don't
claim.
Know if you can go after those two. You're not going to win on those two because they're contracted out just for the fact of serving.
Well, that is true. And I'll tell you, you're absolutely correct. And the reason why I listed them, well, first of all, I listed the notary because the notary was signing her name as to as witnesses to the mortgage claim.
They're doing is they're certifying the name of the person. They're saying that this is the person that came and sworn this paper up and that this is their affidavit, and they're swearing to it. Now, you can use that person against them because it's not true, and you've got a sworn affidavit. If you need to call that person in as a witness, you could. But the bottom line, that affidavit stands, and if you prove that that's a lie, then it's a lie. And they very rarely come in with affidavits, so I'm kind of surprised on that.
Correct. Now, here's what I did. In other words, I addressed my document just like you're addressing your documents in reference to going into the court civil, or under a grand jury. But what I did is instead of addressing it as a civil, I addressed it as a criminal matter. And the reason why I addressed it as a criminal matter because they violated their oaths. They violated the constitutional laws in reference to the first of all, they violated our due process rights under the jurisdiction because we're not a corporation. We are a private sector. We are governed under the Constitution, so therefore they violated my due process rights by serving me a summons and forcing me into their jurisdiction. Whoops. Are we still here?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I heard the phone ring. So that's why I went criminally. Now, what I did is I filed a when I filed it criminally, I filed the exact same affidavit document that I'm submitting to the court. I submitted to my local sheriff's department or my police department to get a complaint number as in reference to fraud. Then I took that document and
right.
I made...
Did you go to the sheriff or to the police? Because the police is not is a corporation.
Correct. I went
authorities.
To the sheriff. But,
okay.
but let me... Correct. I went to the sheriff. But let me explain for some people that aren't... in other words, they might not live close to the sheriff's department. So in other words, when they call to file their complaint or to deliver their complaint... Their local officer is the one that usually comes to their house. So in my situation, I had informed the sheriff's department that I needed somebody to come from that department due to the type of complaint that I was filing, because I was also filing a criminal complaint that had to do with the office of the state. The sheriff's department... And these are tricks that they play because of me not being close to their jurisdiction. What they did is they sent the police officer to pick up my complaint. I said, that's fine. You send the police department, but just so you know, my affidavit is made out to the sheriff's department. So the police department can pick up my affidavit, give me a complaint number under fraud, and then they can forward my document to the sheriff's department under the proper jurisdiction. So that's how I covered that scenario. But you're absolutely correct. It has to be under the jurisdiction of the sheriff's department due to the office of the state. So what you do is you file your affidavit criminal complaint with the court, with your local sheriff's department, including the office of the state. The reason why I'm saying you do this is because we all know that they violated our due process rights, they violated their oaths, and they also violated our rights in reference to a grand jury trial pertaining to we the people of the Constitution. When you file
well,
it criminal...
Well, have you been through any of these things yet in the court and have been successful? I agree with pretty much everything you're saying, but...
Well, John, I've done a lot of research, and I have to tell you, I know that you... I know what you're facing in reference to disputes. I can tell you that where we have to challenge them is in reference to the jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
This is where...
That's exactly...
And I know you...
It's
correct, and
you are
right on. Okay, so I'm agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm.
For the listeners where they have their disputes between the certain matters, what I'm saying to our listeners is what you have to do is you have to challenge their jurisdiction, and their jurisdiction is they violated your rights under the law. Not statutes and codes, but under the law, because we all know statutes and codes are not law. They define the law. That's why I went criminally. The reason why I'm saying that you go criminally, in other words, you address it the same way, exactly what you're doing. The only difference is on your heading, you're putting affidavit criminal complaint. And you're following the same scenarios.
Well, everything in common law covers everything. You know, there's no such thing as the division between civil and criminal. It's one court, and it deals with both issues. And in common law, especially when it's criminal, there's also a side of the court that requires that the compensation for the injured party. So there's sort of a civil side to that, if you want to call it civil. I don't know whether that's a good word or not.
Well, you're absolutely correct.
When we go in after these people, we challenge jurisdiction under fraud, so it makes it criminal immediately. And we always put in the U.S. codes that they violated and the fact that they're facing even jail terms, and also the fact that that we're able to get compensation back from them for the crimes that they've committed against us because we've been damaged.
Absolutely. Now, what I did is I also addressed the senators and the governors. I brought them into my case under ignorance, and that's because they have violated their oaths in reference to the Constitution, and because they have violated their oath to the Constitution and not have stand up for our rights we the people, because after all, we elect them, don't we? Now, let's go back to the foreclosures. I want to read something that's real brief and that will help for those that are facing foreclosures, like Arena, for instance, and other people. This also plays into our taxes. Now, we all know that we have been deceived under the law in reference to our taxes because, after all, it's the same scenario just as our driver's license and the reason why that they use the driver's license and our voting registration is to get us under their corporation.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I want to go too much further, though, down that rabbit hole to, you know,
oh, no.
This program.
We
try to stay, you know, the mortgage is an important thing, and I want to talk about that if you can help people because people are being hurt dramatically, and I get calls about that all the time.
Correct.
When the IRS and stuff, I mean, I do talk to people about that and dealing with the tax people, but it's not wise to do that over the air because there are consequences to that. And we want to stay away from those consequences because we have a focus here, which is the grand jury.
So, oh, I agree.
You know, but if you want to call me and talk about these things, I'd be more than happy to do that. And
absolutely.
But I'm pretty much familiar with a lot of what you're saying already, and I agree with it. I stay always, everything, there's three things that you have to deal with in court and make sure that you focus in, and this is how you win. The first is jurisdiction, the second is jurisdiction, and the third is jurisdiction. That's
correct.
It.
Correct. Well, the only thing I was going to say, John, and you're absolutely correct, and then I'll end the call. What I was going to talk about was conversion. And that falls under, in reference to the foreclosures, and it also falls under what you're addressing, which was just a couple of sentences, actually, is all
mm-hmm.
I was going to read to you. Oh, and for the...
I'm interested in conversion. I'm not sure I know what that is.
Oh, okay. Well, it says, if the conversion of private property is to public property is done without the express consent of the party affected by the conversion and without compensation.
There is
there
the
again,
fraud, yes.
Yes. Now, that also plays into, again, in reference to the foreclosures, where the fraud lays, and that's what that gentleman was talking about in reference to the earlier caller.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a violation. So in other words, the violation had occurred because taxation involves converting private property to public use, public
right.
purpose, and public office. Then it is then it involves an eminent domain of the owner of property not to express consent to the taking. And then that falls under the statutes that I cited you in reference to person, which is 26 U.S.C. section 701 A1. Now, in reference to the banks and the laws that they outline in reference to their claims, they use section 00, or excuse me, they use section 7701. So that's crucial information for those that are facing these threats in reference to foreclosures.
Right. Well, the fact that they're using that 7701, which is coming up against the people for that, ultimately takes them again out of the jurisdiction. That shows you that they're not even in your jurisdiction. You're under common law. You got to maintain that jurisdiction. And believe me, let me tell you, I heard in a court case this week that where the judge said that he had to obey the Constitution, okay? But before he said that, he talked about the legislative body legislating these laws that we're in court for, and then he says, and I have to obey the Constitution. So he played a game there. And he made it sound as if he's going to be focused in on the Constitution for the common law, when in fact he's focused in on the Constitution for the equity side of the law, which is all these statutes made up by Congress in order to trap us into their whole system. And, of course, Congress doesn't even know what they're doing because they're being fed these papers and told to vote for them, and they vote for them because they're paid enough money to do that. And that's where all these special interest groups are all coming from, and it's just a mess. But anyway.
Correct. So I just want to give one other legal advice in reference to the foreclosures, because this is the tricks that they're playing. These people that receive these notices in the mail in reference to these parties that want to help them with their mortgage, what they're doing is they're claiming that, in other words, they'll claim an estimate that on your mortgage, for instance, that you're behind on, and they'll give you an estimate rate, and then they'll say, well, we're willing to help you, and here's your new monthly rate. What they're doing is they're suckering you into their contracts again, just like with a driver's license or whatever, because they want to sucker you into their jurisdiction.
Well, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. So if you in other words, they sold you, packaged you up, they bundled you, sold you another group, now they're offering you a new deal, now you got the contract, you're aware of the contract, and now you're there with them, so they claim. But now you do have a contract to pay them on something you never had to pay for them in the first place.
Correct. And what that's called, what's that called under the legal term is called a reformation agreement. A reformation agreement, now, there's two ways that can play. And I'll give you two examples because it's very important that the foreclosure people listen. Let's say that you're in default on your mortgage. Now, you have two options. You can work with the bank, and that's called a reformation agreement. And that reformation agreement with the bank means that you're gonna work out some kind of a deal in reference to refinancing on your mortgage. So in other words, something that's fair pertaining to the bank and you in reference to a mortgage payment. Now, let's say that you file bankruptcy. You go to court. You're in front of a judge. Now, your bankruptcy, you file your debt, and you claim your mortgage. Now, let's say the judge grants your wish and you were discharged on your debt. Well, we all know that when your discharged debt has been granted, they cannot come after you and sue you. It's the same laws under a credit card scenario. When you file bankruptcy on your credit cards, it's the same exact laws. Mm-hmm. Here's what they do. Even though you went to court and you won and your debt was discharged, what the bank has done has sold your note. This is where these agencies and it looks just like they're coming from the bank because they use the bank's name. They use your bank's name. So you're thinking that this is coming from the bank, but actually in reality it's coming from a insurance policy or a agency in reference to working out your mortgage agreement as to helping you with your debt on your mortgage claim. This is where they're tricking you. Now, what they do is they want you to fill out their questionnaires, and you file these documents back in with this new agency. Then what they start to ask you, guess what? They start to ask you for information in reference to your taxes, which falls under the 10W-4 form in reference to your taxes. As soon as you start filling out that information, then what you just did is you put yourself under their jurisdiction. You also are waiving your rights as to the discharge, and now they're going to claim that you just addressed a reformation agreement and you waived that right as your legal right under the discharge. These are the tricks that they're playing with these people. In reference to for homeowners that are facing foreclosure. This is what they did to me. I'm a witness to this. And, John, I mean, it was so bad, John, that they literally sent me a MyWare so I couldn't have internet connection for a while. So that's why you hadn't heard from me in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I can, John, because I know you're very busy, but what I was going to try to do was send you my document as to what I put together in reference to the information that I filed pertaining to my case. I also had a document sent to me that I am publishing. I'm putting on Facebook, and it was sent to me from the Attorney General out of New York, believe it or not, who filed a claim in reference to We the People pertaining to the banks, where they were committing fraud as to the gentleman and the lady that evidently was talking to the other gentleman about in reference to that information. Well, I have a document that came from the Attorney General who addressed that scenario, what the banks were doing and how they were doing it under the escrow accounts in reference to the loans.
All right, well, send me that paperwork. Let me look at it, and we'll talk some more maybe about it, and we'll see how that works. And you see, one of the key things, what we're doing here, one of the key things is once we get access into the courts and we turn things around and bring it back to common law, all this fraud's not going to be able to come about no more. People are not going to be able to be foreclosed on the way they're being foreclosed on. And all of this, look, every time the credit card people come out after you, it's usually after they sold. The people who made the deal with you very rarely come out after you. When it goes bad, they send you a few letters, but then they package it and they sell it, and some collection agency brokers it and picks it up, and you know they bundle it just like the mortgages, and then they come out after you. And they have everybody's been paid at that point, except for them. They bought this off and they want to get paid by suckering you into it, but there's no contract there. Nothing is there. And that's a fraud. Also, any case that comes before the court, look at bottom line, even an equity court, yet they get away with it because the judge looks the other way. Even when you bring it up, the judge still looks the other way. And that's why you got to sue the judge then. And that's what we're doing in a couple of cases right now. Because every time you get into the courtroom, these people come in without any affidavits. And without an affidavit, there is no case. There's no subject matter jurisdiction. There's nothing there. There's nothing to talk about. And
well, that's
doing
a good
it all
point.
Day long.
And that's a good point. And I'm going to add to that because you are 100% correct. And those that are addressing the courts, on their behalf in reference to hiring these attorneys, whatever, in reference to foreclosure, the question they need to ask, the number one question is, were they a witness to their signature when they addressed their loan, when they took out their mortgage? The question is, they were not a witness. So therefore, they have no legal standing.
Right.
And you are
no
so
legal
correct.
Because, yeah, there's nothing there. There's nothing. There's nothing in the credit cards, everything. There's nothing there. You can win every one of them. And look at what they do is they bundle them up, they buy them, and then they threaten you, and they're going to tell you they're going to sue you, and then they file a lawsuit, and then people settle. And they'll settle for, you know, half of what you owe them or something or whatever. They're happy because almost all of that is profit. They probably bought each one for $50 or $100 a piece, okay, because they're bundled and they're sold by the thousands. And so this is what they do. They make their money that way. But the ones that were not, when you go to court to fight these SOBs, the problem is the judge breaks the law. But that's okay because now you have a new lawsuit that's $50,000 a piece.
And that's why, you're 100% correct, John, and that's why I went criminally, because the reason why I went criminally is because if they violate my rights and they don't do their job as they're supposed to do, well, that gives me legal standing now to file a lien against them for damages rendered as to what they caused upon me.
Right.
That's why I went criminally. And also, and you correct me, I want your advice on this, I also heard, because I also went criminally, that I don't have to file court costs pertaining to the civil level because I went criminally.
You don't have to pay court costs on anything, ever. Because you've already paid that, you own the court. You own you pay the light bill. You pay the
paper.
That's true. The copy machines, the fax machines, the salary. You're the boss. Why do you have to pay for anything? It's your business.
Well, and you know something, you're correct.
They give you a hard time, and you got to add that into your lawsuit. And we're going to change that again.
Well, actually, to be honest with you, John, I think I'm the first one in Florida that filed a criminal complaint counterclaim against the bank. And I tell you, now I don't know if they're playing along with me, but the clerk of the court seemed very sincere when I was talking to her, and she actually didn't really know what way to go on that when I said, well, because I brought that to her attention, that, well, wait a minute here, I don't have to address my income, I don't have to address my bond with you, because it's not in your jurisdiction.
Yes,
yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah. Well, we'll just, look at that. I got a lot of the
I'm gonna, yes, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go. Just for the callers, you know, I just want you to understand that when I received my notice, that they had given me a 60-day notice to, in other words, pack up my stuff and leave my home because they were fixing to auction it off within 60 days. So that's another reason why I filed a criminal complaint. But John, I honor you. You are a blessing. And I know that there are some disputes between different things, but you know, everybody sees you know, in other words, everybody might look at things a little differently, but then after a while it sinks into what you're doing. But I want you to know I honor you dearly, and you have given me hope like you wouldn't believe, and I have used a lot of your information and a lot of other information that I've looked up. And so far, you are, I have to tell you, you're right on. And the jurisdiction is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Go after them
always
in reference to their jurisdiction.
You never have to answer anything else. Everything else is just taking the attention away from the real business at hand, and that's jurisdiction. Now you can get to the damages after that, and they can't defend themselves. So that's
correct.
How you do it.
All right, sweetie. Well, I'm going to let
on.
You go, and thank you so much for taking the call.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next caller, 570, if I can get to the button there. Okay, 570, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. 309.
I want to talk about the using the case law for the filing a document without no fee. I used that in New York State Court, a county Supreme Court, and basically they did file it. And the case laws are on the full faith and credit has to be recognized in every county, and the judges are bound by to follow these Supreme Court cases. And also state
What you're saying is that you were able to file without paying? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and they filed it.
How much did they give you a hard time?
No, not at all. I just asked, you know, the clerk of the court, and one of the clerks says, why are you looking for the clerk of the court? And I said, I need to see her oath of office. And that's when she said, okay, let me talk to her. And then the clerk of the court came out, a chief clerk of the court, and I basically told her that the Supreme Court ruling that you have to file the document without the no fee. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I said, do you have an oath of office, that's when they said, okay, we'll file it for you.
Oh, that's a good way to do it. I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah, and also anyone who takes an office is a seat of the government of the United States. So regardless, they may say, yeah, we're not bound by U.S. code or any federal, you know, code. Yes, they are bound by it.
Oh, absolutely,
and
they're bound by it. But they want to make you believe that they're not, and they hope for you to go away and stop saying those things. And a lot of people do. They stop, you know.
Yeah, then you can point it out and say, did you take an office? Okay, mm-hmm. And the United States, Title IV United States Code, Section 72, it says the office, anyone who takes an office shall be the seat of the government of the United States, and shall be exercised within District of Columbia. So basically, state court, states are also corporation, and they are bound by.
Well, it's a corporation on top of a trust, and they got a corporate charter, but they also took oaths because they're wearing two hats. They're supposed to be our representatives, people who are servants of us, but actually, they also wear another hat under the corporation. And they're really serving them and not the people. And when you trap them in that and you press it, that's when they're stuck because they did take that oath and they're done.
They are acting acting outside of the authority of the oath of office, they are basically committing themselves as, yes, I am the corporate employee operating under profit. So basically, they are liable for all the federal codes because they are considered as ambassador on a constitution, and basically says ambassador shall be bring the claim on the maritime jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So the so state employees are considered ambassadors. And that you can bring the claim on the admiralty because they
I can't get over is out of towns do these things under REM, and they don't even make the report with the federal courts, and they don't even know about it. They're acting because there's law. They actually have code that talks about acting in REM, and that's how they take your houses away. And anybody that's losing a house from the town for taxes and stuff, you know, you read the papers very carefully, and you look at the numbers, and you go look up the numbers, and you'll find the word REM, R-E-M, in REM. And that's the process by which they're taking your home. And that in REM is a piracy act where they're going after a property without having to serve due process on the owner of that property because it's out at sea and you're lost at sea, and that's what they're claiming. But I don't know how these towns think they can get away with this, but that's what they use to do it. And you call them on it, you can sue everybody.
Yeah, and also the state courts, people litigating this in state courts, in REM actually, it's not in REM. They are actually coming in as a quasi in REM. And the quasi in REM is basically the debtor is a subject of
well, that's chancery. They're coming under the chancery court, and uh-huh. That's the big mystery, because I've read some things on this from people, and nobody knows exactly how this got into our system. It seems to have always been there, and so it's been there from the very beginning, and they crept in under the equity side, and they called them judges instead of chancellors. But in some states, they actually do call the judges chancellors. So later on in time, of the latest states that came in, you know, they kind of made it more in the open. And now that it's been there, and the Supreme Court makes the point that Canada, they got some precedents there, they've been there. But you got to work on that jurisdiction to stay out of that. And that's the key. It's really a some kind of a hybrid system, a hybrid court created between, the chancery court, the equity court, the UCC stuff, and then, which is the commercial side of things, which is equity anyway, and then, of course, the admiralty stuff. And it seems to be, like, all combined with insanity.
Oh, yeah, actually, it is a admiralty slash maritime jurisdiction.
Yes. That's why they're the flags
of clause. And the savings and suitors clause, and everybody have the right to bring a common law together with the admiralty in state court and federal court because of the we are running on the bankruptcy, and all the state courts and federal courts
right.
are
they're
running under
on the bankruptcy.
Admiralty.
They're running on the bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah, and
pull out of it.
Mm-hmm. And also, corporations are considered as a citizen because corporations are a member of a man joined together.
Yeah, that's a fiction. It's a fraud. And I make that point whenever I'm in court and a corporation's coming up. Your corporation can't sue. That's another way that you can flip the table and become the plaintiff, because the corporation is not a sovereign. They can't sue a live person, a flesh, a person of the flesh. They're a fiction. So right off the bat, they can't sue you, and they can't be the plaintiff. They're not sovereign, and that's why
and in admiralty, everybody has equal protection, and so basically they're coming in as citizens, and the corporations are they're considered as a citizen, and the
right. But again, that's the law of the sea, not the law of the land.
Yeah. So. What I'm saying is that the state courts and federal courts are coming in under maritime jurisdiction on a savings and suitors clause, and they have to give a common law a remedy under admiralty. So then they could use a UCC, and UCC is a really interesting law because of the Congress actually created these international laws so that anybody who wants to contract...
one of the problems with using the UCC stuff is the fact that you're really playing in their sandbox, and you're looking for remedies.
Not really. People are getting remedy. People are getting remedy under UCC because
right,
UCC,
they are. That's why they're going that route, because they're coming into a court and they're trying to and someone's committing criminal acts against them, and so they move to the UCC stuff and they are getting some remedy, but they better know what they're doing though, because now that they're really coming out after the people that are using that, and if they can get you, they will get you.
The notes are, if you look at these promissory notes in the securitization, all this trust the prospective talks about that these notes shall be governed by UCC laws. And UCC 3-501, it says when somebody is presenting the debt, they have to bring the original note. So basically, based on that, you could win.
Well, that's an interesting point that you just made there, because I just realized something. Whenever we do a lawsuit, we shouldn't ask for, $50,000. We should interpret that into ounces of gold or silver, because
asking for the notes, that brings
it back into their jurisdiction again.
Yeah, and if they don't have original note, they cannot foreclose, and there's a U.S. Supreme Court for that.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the federal note, the dollars. We can't when we sue and you ask for $50,000, it should be ounces of silver or ounces of gold that you're asking for.
Oh yeah, yeah, state citizens.
Because by doing by playing with the notes, It brings you back into another kind of a game, back into their jurisdiction. And I never thought about that one until just now. I realize that now.
Yeah, actually, basically state courts and federal courts go under the Title 28, Section 1333,
right,
which is the maritime / common law. So basically, on the maritime, the people could come in on the common law, which means you could still do affidavit and say, hey, you rebut it, that my claim is a superior if you don't rebut this affidavit. So people actually could move in common law doing affidavit and serve to the party three times, and they default. That's it.
Right.
They're done.
Well,
and
that's
then you
true.
Have to ask
that's
the judge.
Under,
yeah.
That's under the UCC. So.
Mm-hmm. So actually, the people getting remedy under that, and also the UCC law is actually bound by every person in the United States or even in the state doing is called a interstate commerce and or international commerce, which means a state between the state to state is foreign to each other, and the citizen to a foreign nation. So basically, Congress created the law to secure the people for creating this fraud, and they actually created the federal law, FDCPA,
right,
and say, okay, if anybody claims dead, okay, then you have to bring the original note or contract. Where is it? No one has it. So basically, that secures everybody.
Lose everything right there.
Exactly, and Congress created that to protect the people, because they know that all these U.S. persons, they're all securitized everything, and they do not have it. And,
well, Congress,
and anybody.
Congress didn't create anything really good for us. A couple of good people here or there got it through, so.
The acts are created for the security of the people to not to lose their property, because as soon as you challenge the debt validation on the FDCPA Title 15 United States Code Section 1592G, they have to bring the original note and validate the debt, and they have to give you lawful money in order to claim the loan, because we the people actually have to get a lawful money, otherwise then it's a fraud. So you have to challenge that. When did you give me a lawful money? Where is it? Where is the evidence? Did you swear that? And there's no affidavit that you own a contract, neither you have any material facts for the lawful money that you have
right.
given.
Yeah, there's no contract. Okay. There's no subject matter because there's no affidavit. There's no personam because they're outside of the jurisdiction of the common law. I mean, all that stuff. Anyway,
yeah, so
I've got
to
move
codes
on.
Are, yeah, these codes are bound to the banks, so you could use them and say, hey, you know, government create these codes and you're bound by it. Now you have to bring all this evidence. That's it.
Well, absolutely. You want to use whatever you can against these people for that's what it's there for. I mean, well, these codes are old. A lot of these codes, I think, are old and they've been around for a while. In order, they came up out of people because they saw the problem. And so they created for the people to become protected.
Yeah.
All right, but I got to move on because we've got other people. It's getting late. I'm not going to get everybody in if I don't. So, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Okay,
next caller, 863. Go right ahead, 863.
Yeah, John, this is Ray Fiedler in DeSoto County, Florida. I don't know if you remember me. I was the one that was exuberant and flew to New York back in the end of last month.
Right,
and then
right.
She had a postponement, but I saved money on the plane ticket, but it really didn't
yeah,
save me any money.
Yeah.
But I really don't regret that because it was a learning experience for me. They say a picture's worth 1,000 words. And I was able to go to that court case with Bob Schultz, and it told me what I needed to know about the effort we're putting forth with the common law grand jury. Because I'm sure that Bob Schultz has probably got a million like him out there that are fighting individual battles. But all those battles can be won if we can be successful in our efforts on establishing, reestablishing the common law
right.
grand jury's
yeah,
power.
Every step we take, once we get into the process, once we start to do things, every single step we take is going to solve 1,000 battles.
Yeah, I like that little flyer that I got about the common law grand jury showing a list of problems that would be eliminated, such as common core and so on and so on.
Yep.
And it's something that we need to drive home in our own mind to realize why we feel committed to what's happening here, because otherwise we're spinning our wheels. I think all these people that are in the courts today over all these individual problems that are unconstitutional have to be going on until we get this common law grand jury in place, because otherwise we're not going to be putting out these little fires that are going on all over the country.
Right.
But ultimately,
yeah,
I believe what we're doing
jury,
is the solution to the problem.
The common law grand jury indeed is the magic bullet, as hard as that is to really get a hold of when you really start to look at each action that takes place just to get the common law grand jury into place and what it needs to do in the first 30 days, it solves every problem in America pretty much. Then you just got to chase the criminals down.
That's
and
right. Praise
he'll
the
be
Lord.
Brought to you
I
by
really
the
feel
people.
Good about this. I do have a question for you, though. I was monitoring the different states and the number of those that are involved in each state, and I found that several states have many that are involved but have not one county constituted. Can you explain to me why that is?
No, I can't explain to you. I've been moaning and groaning over that for a while, and that's why they need to get moving. And, it's lumps on a log. Monday night meeting was designed. I knew when we started this thing, actually we just started doing something else before we moved into the court system, but we knew we were going to play with this stuff eventually. We just didn't know how soon we were. But, you know, in the beginning I realized, okay, whatever we're going to do, we've got to get a meeting once a week. I chose Monday night. It's got to be every Monday. You can't miss it. You got to do it. And that's what we do every Monday night. Why? Because it keeps people involved. It keeps people informed. It keeps churning things around. It keeps them focused. It keeps them in their mind. So now that you've got the state things going, because we only get, the highest number of people we've had on a call was like 530. That was a couple of weeks ago. But generally we get about 300. And that fluctuates a little bit. Some people leave after an hour or two. Some people come in an hour late and so on. So we get about 300 people, 320 people on each Monday night call. And then we get downloads, about twice as many downloads, you know, maybe 600 or so downloads, maybe a little more than that. So we may get 1,000 people that are really involved, but we have 3,000 members. And then you say, well, okay, what about the other 2,000? The problem is also that, you know, you got to get the state coordinators to push the organizers, because that's their job, to coordinate, to get the organizers going, moving, planning, thinking, and doing. You know, here in New York, I literally went up to people and pushed them into the water. And that's how we got all the counties done south of Albany. We pushed the people in every county into the water, saying, let's go do it. We went down and did it with them and for them, and we moved it. And then we moved to the rest of the state. There were some counties that took up the initiative without that and did it on their own, and they got the job done. And so eventually we got all the states. But if you don't have a mover and shaker, if you don't have a state coordinator that's active, then you have a state that's inactive. So generally speaking, either the state has state coordinators that are not active, they're not coming to the Monday night meetings, and they're not doing what they need to be doing, or they don't have a state coordinator. We have about 8 states still that don't have state coordinators. But generally speaking, when they get a state coordinator, and if that state coordinator is active, all of a sudden that state just goes ballistic. Next thing you know, they're moving along the elections and they're coming down the pike. So that's what we need to do, is push the people. I bring it up from time to time. I'd like people to tell me, you know, if their county is not elected, why isn't it elected? How come you can't have it elected next week? Give me a good reason. Because, you know, when I first decided to do this and we decided, okay, let's get the elections going, literally the first meeting we had, by the second meeting, I realized I need to get the election going to get the ball moving. So we went, I called on a Sunday, got some people together, called the meeting. It turned out to be on a Sunday. So we met together in a restaurant, half a dozen people, and let's plan what we got to do. And we made a date, and we went forward, and we got the county done, which Dutchess County, New York, was the first county done. And then after that, we got together and we continued to work together. And most of those people are still with us. They're our state coordinators, and here in New York, and the movers and the shakers, the people creating the testing process that we're putting together, and you know, making the phone calls and keeping things active. And we've done this in every county. Some of these people were notaries, so we always had a notary or two usually to bring with us. Got the paperwork done. But you got to have someone that's pushing. You got to have a leader in the state to make it really go. And if you got 2 or 3 leaders, then you really got it going. But it only takes one leader to be a pushy kind of guy and make the phone call and say, why can't you do it tomorrow? Why can't we make the phone calls tomorrow? Why can't we do it next week? You know, well, you and me will go. We'll get one other person. We've got minimum of 3, and we'll try to get as many other people as we can. And if only 3 people show up, we've got 3 witnesses, let's do it. You see, that's all there is to it. And right now, the people whose counties are not done, they're behind the 8 ball. Because if we win on the 2nd, now they got to waste their time spending their, not waste their time, but they have to spend their time now doing the things they should have gotten done this past year. Now they got to go get the county elected, and they got to get everything together. And, you know, they got things to do when they should be ready to just walk in the court and let's do it all in one shot. So if your county isn't done, let's get it done, because the win could be very, very soon. And if it happens, we need to be ready to move in and do what we got to do. We're not going to have much time. Once we start doing what we have to do, and these people understand now what we're really doing and what's really happening, now they're going to start moving a lot quicker. So we have to be able to do this as quick as possible to prepare the nation to be able to deal with the problems that are coming upon us and prevent them if possible. We might be able to prevent them. But,
yeah, I just like to make a challenge to the state of Oregon. I just look at the website and I see 47 members. I believe they all love America. The names wouldn't be on here if they didn't. But the bottom line is that they got to understand, and I believe, there's a spiritual battle going on in the heart of America today, and the enemy does not want this to succeed. And we need to understand that the creator of the universe is on our side. So the only thing holding us back from getting this job done is
ourselves.
The deception of the enemy. And
ourselves, too. We're holding ourselves back.
Yeah, that's true,
you know,
too.
Look at, you know, when I first did this and I did the first election, you know, you're a little shaky about it. It's the first time ever doing things like this, and, you know, we're moving forward, and, you know, but I pushed myself, and then I pushed myself to do the next state, a next county, and the next county, and the next county. And then, you know, we all began pushing ourselves and doing it. And then we started pushing ourselves to do other states. You know, we worked and assisted out in Connecticut. We assisted New Jersey pretty much popped on their own. But we assisted Connecticut and Rhode Island. And then the rest of New England started to take off. you know, and we have people in Maine that started to, Massachusetts and Maine started to push New Hampshire, and then we went out and did New Hampshire, and now they're working on Vermont, and once Vermont's in, now we have all of the Northeast done, and I understand Vermont's going to be done in the next few weeks. That's another state. And Maryland, they're working on Delaware down there. And so once Delaware is done, I mean, the entire Northeast is done. And that's what you have to look at. You look at your county, then your state, and then your area. You know, we'll start working in other states. Push along. You know, there's power in numbers. And believe me, that really upsets them and frightens these people when they understand we're in all 62 counties. And then they understand that the tri-state is in. Then they understand, wait a second, the whole Northeast is in. Let me tell you something. That's power. And it works on their nerves.
Yeah, I just want to also share, John, that I want to encourage my Patriot brothers and sisters to not get discouraged. And, you know, tonight I listened to what's going on, and I'm green at this. And I've heard things talked about tonight that are all great to me. But I am still learning terminology and things that I'll need if I'm going to be successful at what I believe God has laid on my heart to do. And the problem that we have in the nation, and of course you know this, is that we have been taught to be ignorant.
Right.
And that's sad. It's a sad state.
Well, we're slaves. We're slaves. Until you realize you're a slave, you have no opportunity to get out to becoming from being that slave, because you're a slave. You're a slave to the system. You're a slave to the jail that they have created. It's a statutory jail. We're all in prison. Prison Planet is a good name that Alex Jones came up, because that's what we're in. We're in a prison planet, everybody here in this nation is imprisoned by statutes, and you have to break out. You know, if you, in order to be free, you got to think free, then you got to speak it and talk it and act it. And until then, you're not going to be free.
You know, I did share a little bit with you, John, about my background. I've been in financial services for 32 years now, and I'll never forget when God introduced the option to me. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, there are no insurance agents, stockbrokers, or bankers that I like. I don't want to be one. And then he put me in there, and now I know why I don't want to be one, or didn't want to be one, is because the industry, the financial services industry, is geared towards marketing products, not educating people. Keep mm-hmm. people in the dark, and you can sell them anything. And right. The same thing applies here. I don't know any attorneys that I like. And now I know why, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exactly where God's putting me, right into the legal system. And I'm finding out that, my gosh, this is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm done, but I just wanted to thank you guys. I really do love you guys in the Lord, and I think you're doing exactly what God wants us to do. Thank
you. We appreciate it. We believe the same thing. This is about justice. Justice is synonymous with virtue, and virtue comes directly from God. We're bringing forth His principles. And so... We're doing the Lord's work. There's no doubt about it from our perspective.
And thank you again. Okay. And I'll just, I'm done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Just real quick before I go to the next, caller here, I just happened to breeze over into the text chat there and something about invited coordinators or people and they didn't show up. Look, when you make a phone call to someone to show up for an election, a couple of things you want to make sure. First of all, that two more people absolutely will show up. Get absolute conviction from those two people, so there's three years, okay? If nobody else shows up and just three people, it's a done deal. Put the thing in the paper and do what you got to do. But when you call the people up, you got to put them on the line. Say, look, I'm asking you to come down. I'm counting on you, okay? You're going to come, right? You know, I'm really counting on you, and you really need to see that. Go hardball on them. Make them understand this is important. And that's what I did here in Dutchess County, and pretty much everyone I pushed on the phone came. And but I made them, you know, when commit to it. I said, no, when they said they're going to come, I'm counting on them coming now. And I let them know, I'm writing your name down, I'm counting on you. And that's how you do it. And maybe if you want to follow up with another call the day before, just to confirm, just make sure you're coming, you know, because this is so important. I really need you there. Yeah, and that's how you do it. Anyway, next caller. Let's see. Wireless caller, 620. Wireless caller, 620.
Sorry, John, I was muted.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I just got a couple of quick ones.
How close are we to getting our jury handbooks?
Well, we're still waiting. We got to hit a certain number, and we're not there yet. So.
Okay. All right. Are we going to
post that on the site? We'll be putting them out. So I'm kind of surprised. We haven't had many people ordering books in the past week or so. We were getting a couple a day here or there, but now I haven't seen anything. Look, this is an important part of what we're doing is these jurist handbooks. This is the education to the people, to the general public. That's what these jurist handbooks are. And it should get their attention to come out to the website to learn more once they start reading these things. And definitely is important for the oath takers. So, and believe me, the clout that we're going to have when we get in there and you give them these jurist books, believe me, they're going to go out to the website. They're going to start to get educated themselves because we're going to force them into it. Either get educated because you're an oath taker or get out of town because we don't need you. Because that's the message.
That's
and we're willing to wait for
focus.
You to get educated as long as you're doing it.
Absolutely. That's my focus with the books is as an education tool.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me just make one more point about this because the sheriff, let's take the sheriff, my sheriff in my county, okay? When we get into power, I'm going to go down and visit him, and he's going to understand with no uncertain terms, you either go learn this Constitution, you go take this course, the course that we're taking as administrators, okay? It's a 120-hour course and 600 questions approximately. And you take this course before your next term comes up, because if you don't, then we're going to make sure you're out of here. If he's not interested in learning the Constitution and figuring things out and understand what common law is and what a statute and the difference between the two, then we don't need him as sheriff. We need him to be learning and understanding and knowing. If you got questions, give me a call, but let's get out there and do it. And everybody should be doing the same thing with their sheriff at some point in time. Once we get in, make sure that your sheriff goes down there and takes this course. Because he needs to learn. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks, John. That's excellent point. Excellent point. My other question, I was kind of looking over the site on some of the instructions, and I noticed that once we get constituted and have our seal, when we go forward to go into another county, would it be acceptable to just have witnesses sign and emboss it with your county seal as a notary?
No, because we're not notaries. We are honorable, and we do things under seal, but we're not there for as a witness. So, no, you can't use that for that purpose.
Okay.
But, you know, again, if you ask around as you're making the phone calls, ask people if they're a notary, you'll find you'll have notaries among you, and once you ask them to work with you on these things. And that's what we did here in New York. Very rarely were we out without a notary, very rarely.
Okay, point taken. I'll redirect my efforts then.
Okay, anything else?
Hey,
thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Okay, next caller, New Jersey, 201. Go right ahead.
Hi, John, Jason from New Jersey.
How did I know it was you, Jason? How you doing?
Either the last, you know my phone number. It was very funny. I want to thank you and bless you for the future that we have and what we all are doing, and it's really interesting that someone brought up the spirituality that we have lost. And if people want to really capture the spirituality that we need for our nation, they really need to go and read the Gospel of the Red Man, put together by Seton, who is the father of Boy Scouts, and it's a well-written book of 108 pages or so. You can get it online free, and in the epilogue of the summation of the Indian's way of life, the red man's message reads like this: the civilization of the white man is a failure. It is virtually crumbling around us. It has failed at every critical test. No one who measures things by results can question this fundamental statement. Apparently, money madness is the main cause of it all. We know that such a thing was unknown among we Indians. This big menace was a failure. Their big menace was a failure of food supply against those who prepared by storage plan, which was effectual. What a civilization! Literally, it is a system by which men can live in a long group, a city, and everyone enjoys the benefits without suffering the evils that result from such association. It goes on for many pages. But the bottom line here is with the trusts. I've been working on that. I'm really glad that this issue came up. It's very apparently that all non-jury courts are null courts, and that's based on statute and the nisi frisi. And the best thing is gain control of your jurisdiction. And with that authority, via the Fifth and Seventh Amendments, they have none. And we are doing a fantastic job. Now, I'm also, I've been pressing the Big Leap vans to Albany and support our truths, and which makes us effective individuals when we partake in the advantage of being individuals who are participating in the movement. My question is, I'm praying to God and the Great Spirit that we do win this court case. We put everything forward and we don't have to worry about any more platitudes and being neglected. But I would like to see our militia counties pulled up, because if we pull, we 25% of the people pull out our consent, because 75% are apathetic. We don't need the people that are inactive. We need the people that are participating. We need to take back our republic, and by show of force, because they are totally repugnant. They are trying to robbing us, and we are letting them do that. And without consent, there is no government, and we the people are their rightful owners of our authorities and our properties, which are being taken from us daily because of their statutory abuses. With that, I open it back to you.
Well, you brought up the militia, and the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So if we don't have an active militia, then we don't have that which is necessary to maintain the security of a free state. And that's the problem here in New York. If we had a really strong active militia, it wouldn't be as frightening as it is, because, I know there is some militia in New York, but it's far and in between. I know the armory here in Dutchess County is closed down, been closed down for many, many, many years. And I've seen them all over the state as I travel around. I've seen the one up in Albany is closed down. They're just closed down, and there's no active militia. I've never been approached. I never heard about it or anything, through the grapevine, so to speak, or anyway. And if I knew about the militia, I would have joined a long time ago if there was something active going on here, because it's our duty for all of us to be active there. And so we have to get the militia up and moving again if it's not moving where you're at. And that's one of the first order of businesses, by the way. We, the people here as the grand jury, has got to really initiate with the sheriff. And that should be a pretty easy thing to do, because all we have to do is notify all of the liberty groups and all of the... See, once we get into power and authority, everybody's going to be looking our way. Everybody's going to be paying attention. And it's a matter of putting a call out to all of the liberty groups, all of you've got the oath takers, the oath keepers, you've got all the other liberty groups, and just people in general. The word is going out, hey, let's get going and let's get a well-regulated militia in this county and put it under the wing of the sheriff for right now, and... We'll take it back and work it out later on. But right now, let the sheriff handle it, because if we go into a state of emergency, that's the guy that's going to be the leader here to maintain law and order, and he's going to need a big posse, and that's going to be us. So once we can establish that in every state, we're going to feel a heck of a lot safer, okay? We're going to be able to secure our resources within our county to be able to make sure we have food and water. And at least, even if we can't keep the electric on all the time, we can get it on a couple hours a day. Whatever's necessary when things start to fall apart to keep things going. And hopefully we'll be able to cut off that. If we come in strong enough and powerful enough and from every corner of the nation, coming in from every county, pouring into the courts, taking control, bringing things into order, it may be too late for them to act, and they may go into a mode of trying to protect their rear ends and finding a place to hide. I don't know. That's another possibility, but only if we move fast. And again, a good reason now why you should have your counties organized and constituted and ready to go. We got to get the job done. So
right. And then basically, that's the thing, too. I've been trying to find your seal. Now, it used to be in documents and video, and I haven't been able to...
I don't know what happened, why it's not there no more, but I did put it up there next to it, because I went looking for it myself, and it wasn't there. But if you go up onto the page, the jurist page, okay, just to highlight the jurist and get to how to start a jury, right above the video... where the download, the docs, and the video is, I also have the grand jury seal there for a download also. So it's right there.
Oh, good. I'm
just
glad
look
I got
at that page, you'll see it.
Yeah, because I was in a, because I always say it was there, and people going, it's not there. And I had
it was there. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it got disconnected from it. I don't understand.
And well,
so I just stuck it up there on its own.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, things happen. But again, I'm really glad that it's back up on there. But
right.
That's fantastic. And with the mortgages, I mean, it's frightening that they do this. And personally, I like,
right.
you know, everyone needs to really actually file their own affidavits. Now, I want to send on an affidavit that we developed in Jersey to you. I'll put an urgent on it, and it will be the affidavit of what happens in court, and you do a checkoff list. And you have actually everyone, there's a space in there to put people's names in it, plus your witnesses that are there. So, I mean, an affidavit is a lot of weight. When it goes back to Jewish law. If two people can confirm that what has happened is the truth, that person is then found guilty by the consensus of these two witnesses. And if they can't say it word for word, the witnesses are dismissed. And the charges are dismissed because, again, there's not two collaborating witnesses. So it's very important. And the power of the attorney, the attorney general and a notary is very key because that you're a deputy to the attorney general, which actually gives you more credence in the pile. So it's like in New Jersey, it's like $75 to get certified to do that. And everyone, if they have the money and the time to do that, become that. Because, again, you're always going to need a notary because, when we are doing our jurists, we still have to swear in our jurists when they do their training, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like everyone, it's a plus. I mean, you're doing a service. And the one thing that is a very important what we're doing, the more people that get involved in doing this, you're doing your share as a man or a woman. And that is an important thing, is it's service to your community. And that's what we've lost in our society, is service to each other. And that's what's making our life so hard. And again, when you become a materialistic person, you lose sight of your service to yourself and your community. The self needs to be there. And never give up on yourself, because, again, it's not what people say, it's what you believe in yourself. And I, who was I'm 61 years now, but when I was a young man, I was told I was retarded. Now, I lost 2 years. And I said to myself, I will defeat my enemies. I will show them up. And I've been showing up everyone for those times. And again, you're never defeated until you give up. So keep on going,
that's
Hardy.
True.
And God bless everyone in the movement. Thank you, John, for letting
Thanks,
me speak.
Jason. Appreciate it. And one other thing, you know, for those of us who have done their states, you know, we've got 11 states and there are others coming on board shortly. You know, we all still have counties that don't have leaders in them and people who are going to pick up the mantle here. So we got to continue organizing and getting together people within our counties and, you know, within our state to make sure we have leaders in every county, or shall I say organizers in every county. And eventually and we need 4 administrators for each county. And I know everybody that's an organizer is not necessarily going to want to be an administrator, but we're going to need 4 administrators in every county. So it's things we have to keep getting more and more people and keep organizing and coordinating activities, you know, getting things going. So, okay, let's take the next caller. Let's see, 530, you got the microphone.
Hey, John, it's Marge in El Dorado.
How you doing, Marge?
Hey, just great. I wanted to just digress a minute, you know, to the mortgage shot. and tell you that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that when they sign the mortgage papers at the escrow company, not one dime of a loan ever goes to pay for that house. Maybe
digits.
The only money in the world that ever transpires is the money that Joe and Mary that's buying the house might put down on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that maybe goes to the bank. But there is never, ever that original loan. And, of course, there's never, ever going to be an original document unless that person's going to pay cash for the house and pays for it in full or whatever. But here's my question for you. Let's say we have a person that, and they buy, I'm talking about a friend of mine that has a very small mortgage, but you know, it's the third time now that he's had a brand new mortgage company without his, you know, there's never any due process on this. They just throw your papers around like it's a football out there. So
mm-hmm.
technically, when they do that, without your permission, first of all, it's such a horrible thing to do. Shows they don't have any manners. Isn't that a crime of some sort when they, without even your permission, they change mortgage companies on you? Three times now.
Well,
this
of
happened.
Course, that void. If there was a contract, I would have voided it out. The fact that the, you know, you didn't agree to that, if you had a contract there, that proves that there was no contract, or it verifies the fact that there is no contract that exists anymore, if there ever was one, because
right.
a contract cannot change hands and to another person to take control of the contract unless both parties agree. Okay, yeah, I agree. We'll move over to him, and I'll work out my deals with that person. You know, unless you get to that agreement, it's irrelevant. It doesn't work. It's against the law.
You know, my question is, hypothetically, what if this guy, because he's going to have an opportunity, wants to pay off his house? I don't think he should pay it off without seeing that promissory note that's signed.
Why even bother paying it off anyway? It's already been paid off.
Well, no, this is just a hypothetical, because I'd be afraid to have him literally do it, because... you know, he would just be throwing his money down a rat hole.
Right.
And yet he wants to get rid of his mortgage. You know, so there is no promissory note on any of these houses. So if somebody just wanted to say, you know,
besides that, didn't Obama give so many billions of dollars to the banks because of all of these problems? He's paid them off, too. They've been paid off so many times. They're making so much money. It's unbelievable how they were just ripping the people off.
Well, I'm just wondering, because this guy is struggling so hard to pay this mortgage, I'm just wondering if there isn't some sort of challenge that he could...
Just think about what I just said. Obama gave billions of dollars to the banks to pull them out because of all the failed mortgages. When it didn't even exist,
yeah.
the whole thing, the banks
exist.
Never loaned the money.
And,
they never
and
had
they got
the
all
money
this
to
money
give.
From Obama? Yep.
Yeah.
The top. So they've been paid off quadruple.
Right. There was
already.
The money came out of the Federal Reserve in promissory notes, and it was digits. It didn't even turn into anything, a note itself, generally speaking. And digits just transferred from one bank to another, and the banks just made the connection and made the loan, and they get paid the maintenance. That's all it is. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Every dollar they're making is just unbelievable profit, every single dollar you're paying them. And when they move it to other companies, from one company to another, it's just,
mm-hmm.
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Right. So
What a bunch of suckers we are.
Yeah, what a dope, exactly. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I'd sure like to know how he can get out of this phony mortgage that only he thinks he owes something on it, and he doesn't. And he's been paying on it for 15 years, John.
Mm-hmm.
And his little balance is you know, it's about $130,000, and it's never changed. The balance has never changed in 15 years.
Yeah.
It seems to me there should be some sort of court challenge.
Well, sure. You know, and look, let me tell you something. once the grand jury comes into play, believe me, this system's going to come up before the grand jury, and an investigation's going to start taking places, and the bankers and what's going on, it's all going to unfold. And all of these houses, all of these investor groups that have been packaging and buying and selling and all this, they're all going to be running for the hills and disappearing. And they better be.
Well, you know, I think a similar example might be, a friend of mine who is now deceased, and she tried to pay off a car, and she sent the whole check. It was, you know, less than $1,000, but she sent it to the bank. You know, the bank sent the check back, and they said, you know, we don't have this paper anymore.
No kidding. Oh,
and she said, well, then who do I owe this to? And they said, we don't know. So she never
paid
it.
But who's she been sending the money to, though?
Well, she was behind. So by the time she paid it off, they said that they no longer had the paper. So she never did pay it, and you know, and then she died, and nobody got the money. even in cars, in other words, they play paper games even with cars.
Right. Yeah, they do what they want because they're the bankers and they own this world, so...
Oh, my God, John. Well, okay. When we get everybody constituted, we can go after these guys.
Oh, you bet. Well, we're going to go after them. Well, New York's going to go after them real quick. So, and
well,
any state that's constituted could do the same thing very quick. Because this is something, it's not just one grand jury. We're going to have to do a collective on this one when we go after them guys.
Oh,
you know, where all the
time.
Counties in the state got to come together as a unified grand jury to go after these people.
Which we'd be so happy to do. And, of course, I'm praying for June the 2nd here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's going to happen until we're right on
top
of it.
Keep your ears to the floor here, to the ground, listening in, because we don't know. Look for the email. If you don't get an email in the next day or two, you better wonder why and find out what's going on. Look at the website. See what messages are on the front page or on the breaking news. You'll definitely check the breaking news every day. Make sure you're on top of everything. Everybody should be doing that. You know, everybody should be out to the website every day anyway, learning, listening to audios and videos and reading stuff and getting educated.
Exactly. So. And how long do you think it'll be before our course is completed?
Well, it should be done this end of this week, and depends on getting money in now to have the technical stuff done. And I'll be working on the pages this week, and hopefully the next week we'll get everything done. But then we have to wait for the tech to do the magic. But with that, we need the money. So,
exactly.
Anybody who's got money, send us money. We need money.
Okay.
All right, we got to go because we're at the end of the night. We got one more caller left. So.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Okay, last caller, 206-783, Donald.
Hi, this is Rosie in Seattle.
How you doing, Rosie?
Good. I just have one very quick suggestion. On the three DVDs that we play at the election, the last one that you did, I know you're busy, but when you get a chance, can you change that to national instead of just New York? And the second one is
that should have been done on national. Wasn't it done national?
It's for New York. The other thing is the hardest to do for us is to collect people for our movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can put, we can stop the smart meters, that will be able to collect a lot of people right there because there's a huge smart meter moratorium movement right now. And
and also, you know, Agenda 21, there's all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, one of the key things, though, what we're looking for is the leaders, the leadership. And that's why, you know, it's not that important that we get a lot of people, but it's important that we get a lot of active people.
I understand
And
that's why, like Washington, that's why I jumped in because I couldn't get anybody to do anything. Now you see Washington has happened. Because
right,
I'm a
Washington's tour. Done,
but
yep.
The problem is we can't get people to sign up for the jury pool.
But that's okay, because look at, as long as you're getting working on leaders for to take the administrative processes, even if there's one in each county, eventually it'll be two, and eventually three. And look, once the gates open up, you're going to have people pouring in for that job, I'm telling you. And they're going to be snatching up that job because it's going to be a good-paying job, and it's going to be an active thing that really can be something that could be done to stop these SOBs. But the thing is just, and the other thing is once we get in, we're also going to have an influx. Believe me, there are tens of thousands of people watching us, and I know that because I see the numbers of people that come to the website, and we get a lot of visitors every day on the website, and yet on the reports that I get, we always have about 40% of the people coming to the website are new people. And so we have a lot of people that have seen us and looked at us and maybe come back and check us out occasionally, but they haven't jumped in yet. Because a lot of people, they love to stay on the wall, you know, they don't make a decision. And but once we take that turn, you know, then all of a sudden you're going to get all these people going to pour in. But irrelevant to that, the big thing is that we're going out to the general public, and we'll use the voters' roles in order to go out and get people. And just like they're doing right now. I mean, we can use the telephone book. It doesn't matter. The point
is very, very difficult. Because Don and I, we spend a lot of time doing this kind of stuff. Like this last Saturday, we went to the Occupy Monsanto March. We handed out 400 of the trifold flyers. And we constantly do this kind of stuff. We go to libraries and we leave piles of them. And we go to the public market. We go everywhere. And we get a lot of people looking. But nobody wants to do a thing.
Because a lot of people are afraid.
I don't think it's that, because they are worried about smart meters. If you have smart meters on it,
yeah, I understand that, but the thing is, and we'll try to make some notes of that, but look at, here's the thing. You know, there are people that have been seasoned somewhat. They understand the problem. They see that they're trying to solve the problem. They get frustrated, and then they find us, and those are the people that really hook on to us. People that have been in a court, they see all of the criminal activities going on. They become educated. They realize the New World Order is there. They see the game, and then they find us, and they hook on to us. You see, those are the people we're getting, and we got to kind of look at, people have got to be primed. You know, I talk to people, I haven't got a clue what's going on, and to try to bring them into what we're doing, they're not interested because they're too busy watching whatever's watched on TV these days.
They're not interested. It's because we haven't said the word that affects them. They only care about their own.
I understand that. I understand that. But if it takes that one thing, then, you know, that they haven't been ready on the other. You look at, the reason why you should want to get involved with National Liberty Alliance is because you realize that we're about to lose this country. It doesn't matter about Agenda 21 or the smart meters or any of those things. All that things collective, that's the disease.
But you're preaching to the choir. We're already
right.
In. But the people
right.
On the outside, they really don't care about that stuff.
Right.
They only
care when
you say something's
not
going to affect their pocket. Then
right.
They
my
will
point,
come up and
yeah,
do
it. But my point is that we're not that we don't want anyone. We'll take anyone at any level. It doesn't matter. But what we really want to chase down are the people that are somewhat seasoned and ready so that they're able to get educated and start moving quickly. You know, the people that are not, they're not really motivated. But they will be eventually, okay? Don't get me wrong. First of all, we have a lot of work to do once we get in because we have to start re-educating the people. That's why the booklets are so important. That's why, you know, the courses are getting control of our schools. And it's going to take 20 years to really get an educated public back out there again, because right now we're all a bunch of dummies. We're slaves. We've been trained in slave schools, and we're trained to be a slave, and that's what we are, a slave, until we break loose. And
right.
That's the first order of business, is someone has to realize that they're a slave and they need to break the chains.
Now
you got someone.
We're trying so hard. Every week we reach hundreds of people, every week, Don and I. But look at
well, right in the brochure. Write in the brochure the list of things, because you got a good point there, because this has been brought to our attention by other people of other things, like the Agenda 21.
Right.
You know, a lot of people here, a lot of people there. Well, write your brochures to target the people that you think you're handing them out to, and that'll bring them on board, because there's a lot of things we can stop, and that of course is one of them.
Okay. Could I write something and you can see if you approve it?
I don't have to approve it.
Because I don't want to say
that
anything for the group or not.
Well, you're right, but look at smart meters, we all know, is evil. Okay, it's all about control, focus, and there's some problems there. They can control your electric, and it's just evil. The whole thing is evil. So you can write look at what we got. We got brochures up there. Just add that among the list, and highlight that a little more than whatever it is, the group that you're chasing. I know a lot of people very heavily into the Agenda 21, so those people should be focused in on the Agenda 21.
Well, we are, too.
Yeah.
Right, in Seattle, so, most of the people who joined the Common Law Grand Jury group is all from Don and I, our group that we started here. We are going against all of those things. And
right, so any of these evils that we can correct, you can list them out and say, this is what we're going to change. You know, you're involved as much as I am or anyone else. Just stay on the print. Look, the only thing that I'm concerned about and I make a big thing about is we have to stay on the principles, we have to stay on the maxims, and we have to stay on the process, okay? And we can't move from that, okay? Those are very strict. We can't move. You've got to learn them and know them and be them.
Yes.
But you know, how you say things and do things and write in brochures, everybody should be creative and do what they want to do. Just, you know, make sure it fits in the groove with, you know, the principles and the maxims and the process that we're working with. That's all.
Okay. Go by the words on your DVD, and I just
Do that. And you can go up. We got brochures. If you go to, under Jurist, go to Jurist Documents. I believe under Jurist Documents we have, and we also have Q&A. I don't know if we have anything written in Q&A, but anyway, under Jurist Documents you should find a couple of different brochures. You can take them and you can rewrite that. You can add things to that. You can change things. Just as long as you don't change the principles and the process.
Okay.
You know, that's all.
Okay, will do.
Okay.
Thank you very much for what
all
you
All right, thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, that was our last caller, so I guess we'll end it for the evening. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and let's see what happens. And keep your ears to the ground. Pay attention. Check out the site. If you're not getting an email, check out the front page, and particularly the news page is where we'll post these things. If June 2nd is off, we'll be. June 2nd is off. I don't know how we'll word it, but we'll word it. We'll word it on the front page, and we'll word it in the news, and we'll send out news emails. But don't count on your emails. Check the website. Keep in touch, and let's see what happens. And it doesn't matter on June 2nd if that day changes again. I think we're going to maybe get to the court without having to actually physically go to the court. I think that's how it's going to end up. Because of this mandamus we're sending out tomorrow, this can be the end all of the whole thing and the solution, and we'll push for that. So let's see what happens. Okay, with that, good night, everybody. Thank you.